Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Now listen, cadet. I've got a job for you. See this button? Don't touch it! It's the history eraser button, you fool!
So what'll happen?
That's just it. We don't know. Maybe something bad. Maybe something good. I guess we'll never know. Because you're going to guard it. You won't touch it, will you?
Can trusty Cadet Stimpy hold out? How can he possibly resist the diabolical urge to push the button that could erase his very existence? Will his tortured mind give in to its uncontrollable desires? Can he withstand the temptation to push the button that even now beckons him ever closer? Will he succumb to the maddening urge to eradicate history at the mere push of a single button? The beautiful, shiny button! The jolly, candy-like button! Will he hold out, folks? Can he hold out?
Tune in next week as...
Emerson Radio Program. Why, hello, it's 26 minutes after the hour of 1, and this the month of February in the year of our Lord, 2011. Think of a drawing near that ye might be amused and entertained. I have just 4 words for you, Don. Those words are, the jolly candy-like button.
That's okay.
Don't worry about it. I know you're out of the room prettifying yourself for Seth Aaron.
I was brushing my teeth.
Let me ask you this.
Meet Seth Aaron with tuna salad in my teeth.
I'm going to ask you something. I want you to be honest here in your answer. Did you put on additional or different makeup today because of Seth Aaron?
I did not, although I am now wearing lipstick.
Now, you were wearing lipstick when I came in. Here's the thing. Sometimes you put on lipstick halfway through the show. I've seen it happen. You did it last week.
Yeah.
What is that about? Did you put on lipstick for Big Jim?
No, sometimes my lips feel a little bit dry. And I put on lipstick. I don't actually have any...
It's not decorative. It's a lubrication thing.
Yeah. Sometimes it's decorative. Sometimes it's just to make my lips feel a little less dry.
To give you the tiny little bit of external succulence that you require.
Right. Because you might have noticed I actually put on a different kind of lipstick last time. It was a creamy stuff that comes in a tube and you twirl it up and it has a foam applicator. Whereas this is your traditional lipstick that is some sort of compressed waxy petroleum product.
Okay. I was just asking if you put on lipstick. So it looks nice. Hey, by the way, let me just note, if you see Cheryl Canicola later today, which you won't for reasons that I'll get to in just a second, you should know that I noticed her new haircut before everybody else. Now, just because I wasn't the first person to mention it. Here's the thing. She walked into the studio the other day at Outlook Portland. So I'm sitting up there with Grant Butler from The Oregonian, who's a great guy, by the way, who we should have on at some point.
We should. He's a great guy.
I had never met him before. I'd read his column, but I didn't know much about him. And then so Cheryl was running a little late because of the traffic and the snow and the hey. And so she gets into the studio, and I noticed right away, like right out of the gate, new haircut for Cheryl. But did I say it immediately? Did I just sort of, did I jump out of my skin with it? Did I go chasing after the compliment and just sort of galloping toward it? No. I held back. I waited. I thought, you know what? I'm going to give it another minute or two, and I'm going to say, hey, by the way, I like your new haircut. And then I was just going to sort of feign like a sort of nonchalance to go about your writing. She's in the studio like 4 seconds, and the guy who directs the episode goes, hey, new haircut for Cheryl, which means then that I can't note it, because then it looks... And then I just fell into this whole thing of trying to convince her that I'd already seen the fact and noticed the fact that she had a new haircut, but that was just a road to nowhere. That didn't work at all.
I actually had to, a number of years ago, I had to train myself to tell people when I notice things about them, because I'm a little bit of a sociopath, and I'm really, really incredibly self-absorbed.
I don't think you can be a little bit of a sociopath. I think that's an either-or proposition.
I don't know. I don't think I'm full-on sociopath, but I know I have those tendencies.
Okay.
And I'm really incredibly, like, egocentric. And so I tend to notice things about people, but then not say anything. So I had to actually teach myself, because I was always in that situation where I would see somebody and I'd go, oh, he's wearing a nice shirt today. And then someone else would come in and say, hey, I really like that shirt. And the person would be so pleased to get the compliment.
And you couldn't say it.
And I'm thinking to myself, I could have said that.
I could have said it an hour ago before anybody.
I could have been the one getting like the pleasure smile of the person who's happy.
Now I have to wear your skin under the moonlight.
So I had to actually put myself where I would think to myself, hey, that guy's wearing a nice shirt today. And then I would think, okay, Don, now say it out loud. And so I'd say, hey, I like your shirt. But I had to go through that three-step process. And I still kind of do a little bit, to a certain extent, where I notice someone has a new haircut, and then I think to myself, okay, now, Dawn, tell her you like her new haircut. And then it comes out of my mouth.
We're stupid. it is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It is Tuesday, February 22nd, 2011. Coming up inside today's program, we get your snuff watch. Real again with the snuffing. Okay.
They're just dropping like flies. What can I tell you?
I know I ask this every time now, but it just seems like, and I don't hold with the whole like rule of three or whatever, but it does seem like we're getting a lot of dead celebrities recently. So, but none of the, I don't want to try to impugn anybody's life on earth or just, you know, say that any life is insignificant, but there are certain people that they resonate more than others. Is this somebody about whom I'm going to care a lot or that I didn't care a lot? Is it notable?
I don't know if you'll really care a lot. It's notable, but this person is not a celebrity. You would not recognize their name. But they did...
They created something?
They created something something significant.
Something in the world of entertainment or science?
Science.
Male or female?
Male.
All right. I asked that like it's going to help me at all. And it's like,
oh, now I know.
Yeah, no, I got nothing.
All right. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. Snuff Watch coming up today. Also, Taser Watch coming up. Later on, about, I don't know, half an hour from now, we're going to have Mr. Seth Aaron of Project Runway in the studio, for whom Dawn has gussified herself. That'll be coming up.
How do you know it's not for you?
Because you didn't look that way an hour ago, and I was here. I've been here the whole time. Oh. So, I'm just saying, none of my business. You want me to push you to answer you, but that's the answer.
Maybe I wanted you to notice the difference. Maybe if I'd come in pretty this morning, you would not have noticed any change in my appearance. But by putting on the lipstick later, it forced you to actually notice me in a new light and then actually acknowledge my prettiness.
I think this is the plump sparkle that your lips always had.
Or just go, why Miss Taylor?
Have you done something different to your hair?
Exactly.
And then you would say, why, no, I haven't. And then you'd sort of flip it girlishly and sit back down and start clackety-clacking at the keyboard.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Right. Just like that.
Like a Kelly girl. Seth Aaron from Project Runway is going to be in the studio today. Here's how great we are. He's here just for no particular reason. Yeah, just to come by and jaw with us.
He likes Dawn. Us.
That's right. Come by and shoot the breeze. He'll be counting down his top five. He's the top five songs that he has that he works to or designs to. When he is creating and fashioning in the world of high style. So that's coming about half an hour from now. Just a little bit of business here. I had noted last hour in Legion of News that we might be talking to listener Daniel today, who's in New Zealand, who is not in Christchurch, but who's outside of Christchurch and has a lot of friends there. He may or may not be talking to us today. If so, won't be until about after 3 o'clock our time. He said that in New Zealand, unsurprisingly, I guess I should have anticipated this, they have asked people to only use cell phones, which is what he's on, for emergencies. Because I guess it knocked out communications, and so the remaining cell phone infrastructure there is just it's already dangerously overburdened. So I had mentioned that we were going to be hearing, and I told him last night, I said, like, don't... Like, this stupid show is not worth, like, don't cause any trouble for anybody in New Zealand where they're dealing with, you know, an earthquake that killed scores of people, like, for this ridiculous program. So
many lives would have been saved, except this one guy was on the phone with some American radio show on the internet.
Sources say this man, and then it just cuts to a horribly awkward photo of me. So, yeah, I don't want it to be a thing where, like, you know, many Banthas died in the service of bringing me the message. I don't want it to be like that. So he may or may not touch base with us later on today after 3 o'clock Portland time. But Daniel in New Zealand is he sent me some text based updates anyway. So we'll talk about that here in just a bit. Snuffwatch coming up today. Taser Watch coming up today. Seth Aaron going to be in the studio with us. We've also got clue number 2 for your EH vending name that snack contest. Clue number 2 coming up. Plus Don Taylor is tracking the following headlines for you on this Tuesday.
Bold burglars cut into a Stanley strip mall. An officer shoots another officer by accident. And a woman ends up in jail over a melee over Thin Mints.
By the way, really, an actual melee?
A melee over Thin Mints.
You know, what doesn't really happen all that often is a ruckus. A ruckus is a thing
that... brouhaha.
A brouhaha only happens in the 1930s at, like, a speakeasy. And it's not really... It's like a brouhaha is where there's sort of... You know, there's, like, harsh words exchanged, or maybe the crowd fears that there's going to be violence, but then it's averted. A ruckus always happens upstairs when you're at your grandfather's house.
And there's generally, I would imagine in a public place, there would be either broken chairs or fisticuffs at a ruckus.
Yeah. You know, and a kerfuffle only
and
happens
a melee as well.
In Lake Wobegon. That's where a kerfuffle happens. And so forth. We'll talk more about, oh, I see. Now she's not even online anymore. I see how it is, sister. All right, I know how things operate over there in Cheryl Land.
Oh.
We're going to talk about Cheryl. We'll fix her little red wagon here in just a second.
Were we going to talk about why Cheryl isn't here and now she's...
Yes, we are. So Snuffwatch coming up, Taser Watch, Seth Aaron, clue number 2, those headlines. We'll get to that. We'll do a little bit of a recapping of House last night. All I'm going to say about... We might even do it here at the beginning just so we can get it done, because Seth Aaron's going to be in and then the whole show might... I mean, I'm not saying...
He doesn't want to listen to us talk about House.
Well, I'm just saying, the show could go... that could be a thing that just consumes the rest of the day. We might not have time for it. We might, but who knows? I don't want to leave these things up in the air. I will just say that I posted something on Twitter last night, and I'm not one of those guys who typically gets online. I have to share all my thoughts about this television series with the world, like, in real time. Like, I'll talk about them here, but it's not like I just monopolize the internet to tell you what I think about, like, you know, some rerun of Hill Street Blues that happens to be on TV Land.
Why not? Everyone else does.
I know they do, and here's the thing. That was, by the way, that was my, not Rita Moreno, but that was the woman who stands to the left of Rita Moreno in the rooftop sequence in West Side Story when she says, "I like the Isle of Manhattan," and then her saucy friend in the background says, "I know you do." She's my favorite woman in West Side Story that isn't Rita Moreno herself, by the way. She's way better than Natalie Wood. So on the iPhone, I got this thing. I hate to be this guy right out of the gate, but there's this app that I got for the iPhone, which I don't even really use. I mean, I can't anticipate a scenario in which I would need it, but I got it because it just seemed friggin' awesome. And I'm sure that they have it for Android-based phones or whatever. It's called Into Now. And which I guess I got to stop reading the meanings and the names of things, because I think they just started to run out of names. And so, like, what's this called? Well, it's called Pink Block Ninskin.
Oh, I was just thinking about the painfully obvious names, like, you know, listening to that Freakonomics podcast, and then I keep coming in with guests saying, "This is brought to you by GoToMeeting."
What does it do?
It helps people go to meetings.
Ah, there we go. So here's the thing about Into Now. It's, you know, do you use the Shazam app? Have you ever used that?
I'm familiar with it, but no, I've never used it.
So the Shazam app, if people haven't used that, Shazam is actually pretty great. That is actually the first, I don't know that it's the killer app, but Shazam was the first thing that I heard. That was the first app that I ever heard people say, "I got to get a phone just so I can use that." And the deal with Shazam is, if you're listening to the radio, you're listening to whatever, some song, even if you're just, like, in a restaurant, and you hear a song and you go, "That's a great song, what is it?" And you just hold your phone up to the speaker for like 5 seconds, and then it immediately tells you the song, the artist, the album, and links to a thing where you can buy it. Which is just, and it's a thing that every now and again I'll use just because I want to be agog at the fact that it actually exists and works. So Into Now is that for television shows. And you might say to yourself, well, okay, but it's on television. I already know what it is. But sometimes, like, if you just come in halfway through, you catch the last few minutes of a TV show, or you go, well, is this a movie? Is this a series? Is this a mini? Is this a new show, or is this a rerun? What the hell? And you just hold it up to the TV. You let it listen to the TV for like 5 seconds. Here's the thing. It shows you the series, the episode, the season, other users of the app who are watching it at that moment, other things that they enjoy. It links you to a message board for that series. And then... buttons appear at the bottom that'll take you to either the IMDb entry page for that, or I swear to God, the Netflix queue. Where you can just, you can press it and it'll take you to the Netflix entry for that series, so you can then immediately watch it or just stick it at the top of your queue.
Wow.
Also, it's free, because we live in an era where everything is crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, doesn't that weird you out a little bit? How can that possibly be free? And by the way, how can that possibly be free and then goddamn,
how can it work?
Well, because it's magic. Because it's got the bones of angels ground up into it.
Wow.
My thing is, how can that work? And then goddamn Classmates.com still wants you to pay like $9 to see some fat bastard you went to school with. F that. You know what they charge you now for? I've tried to sort of turn into Andy Rooney, but you know, here's the thing. You know what they now charge you for online? And this is only going to get worse as time goes on. For reasons that I'll get to in just a second, I was trying to look up some obituaries of people that I don't like the other day, which is, I think, how I'm going to spend more and more of my time as I get older, just sort of see, like, who I've outlived. Just sort of another adversary down in flames. Bam! But that legacy.com, which is not for the it's not the hospital, legacy.com is now where all of the newspapers funnel their obituaries after a 60-day period.
Oh.
So, like, you go to the, your Oregonian or your L.A. Times or something, and for most of those newspapers now, after 60 days, you can't just go, even with, like, the Google cache function, which I tried, you can't just go looking up the obituary. It says, it'll show you the first two lines. So-and-so died after a long, painful battle with ellipsis, and you go, click here for more, and I'm like, what did they suffer from? And I click on it, and then it's... Welcome to Legacy.com. If you would like to read this obituary, it's 99 cents. Or like $10 a month or something to read all the obituaries you like. And really, even for me, how many enemies could I possibly have that I need a month's access to an obituary thing? So that's, how is it that they're charging for that? You know, and then it's like I've got this thing which is fundamentally just, wizardry. Like actual sorcery on my phone. I've got that thing where you just point it at Spanish and it becomes English. What the hell is that?
And Hulu going, it's not enough that we actually make you watch ads. Now we have Hulu Plus and we want you to pay for stuff.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how many people's reaction has just been a very bored kind of a no.
Yeah.
No, thank you, Hulu.
No, I don't think so. I'm going to pass on that if it's all the same to you. Because, really. Yeah. What is the point of that? How much could you possibly care about, just seeing some Full House rerun from 1989? I'm just so totally off track today. I'll just recap one more time. Snuff Watch, Taser Watch, Seth Aaron coming up. Clue number two in the Name That Sound contest brought to you by EH Vending. Find out more about them at ehvending.com. We'll get to those headlines. Cheryl will not be here today, though. And this all does tie in together. I was just talking about this thing called Into Now, which is the app of the iPhone. So Cheryl won't be here because Cheryl's at home watching her brand new television. Brand new, larger than life. It's like the thing is the size of a wall, apparently. I mean, I know that for a moment you were the queen of Television Hill, but apparently you've been usurped. I was going to say a Berkeley to your Gershon, but now with burlesque, I have to say an Aguilera to your Cher.
Aguilera to my Kristen Bell.
To your Kristen Bell. So she went through this whole thing with her television a while back. I don't know if you were seeing these sort of Twitter updates or the Facebook updates from Cheryl, where it wasn't that the TV quit working. It quit working well. The only color it would show was pink. And so she would just be watching anything. It didn't matter what. For a while, I think she said she thought that the Blazers were doing like a breast cancer fundraiser because their jerseys were showing up as pink. And she could have either green or blue on the screen, not both. With the color setting, she had to choose. Like green or blue. Couldn't do both. And the thing about it is it's like... With the computer, if the computer goes belly up or something, you can kind of fudge your way through trying to fix it. Like, you can do a reboot and, wipe the hard drive and reinstall from the disk and, whatever, run a defrag if you got Windows or something. The television, if the television quits working, you're not going to fix that. What are you going to do to fix the television? Nothing. You call a friend of yours who knows how to fix the television. You go, Bob, what should I do? And he goes, well, if you try jiggling the thing, and you try jiggling the thing, and that's it. But she lived with that for like 2 weeks, which I think is 2 weeks longer than I would have lasted. And so she got this television, and she ordered it from, she bought it off Amazon. From, whatever the actual brick-and-mortar provider was. But she got it via Amazon, and then the deal is Amazon delivers now. But Amazon delivers, and I know several people have had this problem, where Amazon has these third-party companies that deliver their products for them, and it's just a crapshoot. Sometimes it's like, sometimes it's great, sometimes it's just a bunch of jackasses. And so they told her this morning, they said, we'll be there between noon and 2. So at like 10:15, they show up at her house, when, of course, she's at Outlook Portland, and her mom calls, like, they're here with the television. And so they showed up, like, way early. they were, I think there was a thing that was actually, like, she paid extra to have them set it up and, you know, and make sure that it was interfacing with everything and it was getting the satellite and it was plugged into the entertainment center. She said apparently they showed up 2 hours early. Cheryl's not there. They just knock on the door. They drag, as soon as her mom opens the door, they drag the television into the house, basically. The guy just reaches into the box, finds the plug, sticks it into the wall. The television just goes and sort of hums to life. And they go, okay, you're all set. Bye now. And then they just pile into a clown car and take off. So she had to go home and sort of make sure that everything was actually working. But the thing is, it's like a total honeypot. You know, it's a roach motel. Because now, having gone home to make sure that, because her mom was going to be at home today, having made sure that the television worked and that she didn't have to call Amazon or report some sort of a breakage or, you know, making sure that she plugged the TV in, and then I think that she immediately just fell under its spell. I think that it's just some sort of Svengali, and immediately just, you know, she just sent me a series of texts during Legion of News. Says, my TV is pretty. No punctuation. No, it's like E.E. Cummings sent this to me. I may never leave the house again. I'm now rewatching every Pixar film ever made. So there's going to be no Cheryl today. So probably maybe not tomorrow. Maybe not the day after that, depending on how long she's under the siren song spell of the television.
I have a big TV. I'm here.
I'm not passing any job. I'm just giving you the information.
Maybe you should pass.
I'm not criticizing. No. I'm just, this is an I report, you decide, Don. And you've decided that Cheryl's a slacker. I, myself, I have not said that. I noticed her haircut before anybody else. I didn't say she was a slacker.
I wonder what would have happened if the new giant TV came the same day we had Nathan Fillion in the studio.
I don't know. I'm just...
What would she do then?
I'm just making these observations. I just... I'm not assigning any sort of value to any of them. All right, so there's that. So Cheryl's got the television, which I just... And I've all of this stuff to get to. I was going to try to tie the television into house last night and then to... here's what we can do. We can do one of two things right now, and then we got to take a break here in a bit. We'll talk to Seth Aaron when he gets here. I could do one of two things, and it sounds like I'm kind of fragmented, but I'm not. It's just that I'm trying to multitask because some things got held over from yesterday. I could either segue from Cheryl's television into talking about House and a little bit of Breaking Bad, or I could tell you why I was surfing the obituary pages.
Wow. Wow.
Well, your choice.
Which would you rather do? Which would you rather talk about?
We should probably do House.
Okay.
Because it's timely and because it's already, you know, I don't want to get behind.
No.
It's like that's a thing that, you know.
Okay.
All I'll say is this.
I'm not sure there's going to be a lot to say about it anyway. So.
I know how I got into the business of the app, the iPhone app. I was saying that I'm not one of those people who feels like I have to just sort of get online and go, OMG, I am currently watching, you know, and then talk about whatever it is that, you know, that somebody on like Parenthood is wearing or whatever. You know, all the spangles on Lauren Graham are to die for. I don't do that. But last night, for the first time, I think, in months and months and months, I actually paused the television and the playback of House. And then I went online to post something snarky about it. And it was snark, incidentally. Let's have no illusion. It wasn't criticism. It wasn't commentary. It was humor, I guess. But it was snark. Really, as pioneered and perfected by our friends at Television Without Pity. I just paused the playback of House and I went online. And this is what I said. I said... I believe that House MD now has its own double meat palace. And then I put a little onomatopoetic, I just put yeesh at the end of it. So, now for those of you who are Buffy fans, you'll know what I'm talking about. Those who are not privy to the wonders of the Buffyverse, I will say that double meat palace is considered by many people, including myself, to be the single worst episode of that program that ever aired. And that's saying something, because Buffy really just sucked like a Hoover for the last year and a half, 2 years it was on the air. I don't care what anybody says. The batting average went way, way, way down. But Double Meat Palace is the worst episode that series ever had. It's abysmally bad.
Yeah, it is pretty bad.
It's worse. It's cancer bad. I mean, it's terrible. So for me to compare something to an episode to the Double Meat Palace episode of Buffy really is, that is bringing the most unkind kind of criticism to bear. But last night's episode of House was bad. It was so bad. It was actually the first episode of House I think I ever considered not finishing. I think at one point, in fact, we might as well just go to the, we'll just do this. I'll go to the, where's my House theme? There we go. I think it was actually the first episode that I got about 15 minutes in. And I've been watching television long enough. I've been watching television for 38 long years, kids. And no matter how much you might try to convince yourself that a thing is going to turn the corner, it's going to get better, that, you know, like at the halfway mark, it's going to improve. You and I both know that when an episode reaches a certain, like, minute marker, they're not throwing some series of red herrings at you. It's not like an elaborate sort of misdirection where at the end it suddenly becomes a work of genius. It's just bad.
Yeah.
And about 15 minutes in, when it became clear that the whole thing was him talking to children, I just thought, why? I could be outside getting fresh air. I could be running and jumping. I could be spending time with my loved ones. I could be just be staring at the carpet, which would be more satisfying than last night's episode of House. Dawn Taylor?
Yeah, there was one brief moment that was actually entertaining in that entire episode. And that was when House was recounting, you know, the activities of his staff. And we were seeing the staff, like, through House's
right.
description. But again, that's already been done before and better on, say, the X-Files.
Yeah.
So, no, it was not a good episode. This entire season, it's kind of ironic because you finally started watching it and you caught up.
At the same time as everybody
At the same
else.
Time. And the season, it looks like it is definitely starting its downward spiral. The show is definitely on the decline. And this...
Because it's not one or two episodes that have been... It's not like we're getting a bad patch. I mean, it's been a bad season.
It has been a bad season. And this was the worst episode of a bad season so far. I don't even know where to start. The kids... who were unbelievable and unsympathetic. Him and the, and I'm talking about the two kids that
yeah,
he was sitting
in the
hallway with.
Yeah.
Him in the classroom with the kids and the unbelievable kid with the encyclopedic movie
which they
knowledge.
Never paid off, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, that's a thing that they kept setting something up where it's like he would make these movie references and the kid would go, that's from Pulp Fiction. And I kept waiting for them to, for that to sort of reach some sort of a conclusion, like it was going somewhere. And it was like, here's what I think that was. It was like they... The guy who was writing the episode got drunk and overslept and missed his deadline. And he was like, oh, crap, I don't have any knowledge of my own and I don't have any skill and I'm drunk. I'll just string together a bunch of things from other movies. But wait, somebody will notice that. Ah, a character will notice it and they'll point it out. Then it becomes an homage and it's meta. And they just didn't have anything else to fill the episode with.
No.
So that's where they stuck that kid in. It's just some sort of lackluster device.
Yeah, and it's more of the whole, ooh, you know, Cuddy and House are going to have a hard time having a relationship.
For no reason.
Because he's an ass. Which, you know, okay, we already knew that.
From college, apparently. Yeah. She's known that for like 30 years.
And our medical mystery of the week, which we're hearing about third hand and don't care anything about.
I don't even really remember what it was.
I don't know. I remember the guy coughed up a hunk of his lung at some point, and then people were running around. They were all running around yelling possible diseases at each other.
Oh, because he'd swallowed a pea.
Okay, sure.
I think that's how. I think that was the resolution of the whole
thing. No, it was fairly terrible, and and it just made me sad.
I mean, it really is, maybe I was spoiled because I did power load House, and I watched the first six seasons in. I mean, not instantly, but over the course of like a year and a half, I watched six seasons, but I'm still watching it at like 50 times normal speed or something. So I got all of the really, really great episodes, like, in one big chunk, basically. And so now it's like, it's like the Woody Allen thing about the, this food is terrible in such small portions. So now it's like I'm getting something rank and unlikable, and I'm only getting it in this tiny little drip once every Monday. So it's like I'm getting something I don't want and in portions that I don't want. The other thing about last night's episode, you were talking about those kids being unsympathetic. And I know that it's difficult to cast child actors. I know that that's a bit of a crapshoot because...
But it wasn't these kids' fault.
No.
They weren't bad. It was just they were horribly written.
And it's like the whole sequence of House being in the classroom talking to the kids and being... acting basically the way he would if he was in a room full of adults, about whom he doesn't care. Not that, like, the show was ever really, really believable, and it's become less and less so, but putting it in the context of him talking to a class full of, like, fourth graders or whatever, it just brought into stark relief exactly how totally and completely unbelievable the show is. Like, how the suspension of belief just is no longer adequate. By having him do all this stuff in the presence of children...
But
and
also
a teacher and other adults.
Right.
And that's where you just realize, well, hold on, like, this...
They would have put a stop
never,
to this.
Ever,
yeah.
ever would have been allowed to happen.
No.
And it's not like they were doing it just because he's Gregory House, because they thought he was like Dr. Hitari or whatever his name was. So, there's that.
And then just this strange, convoluted thing of him wanting to know what was going on with Cuddy, so I'm stealing her laptop, and then...
I don't even remember what he found. He was apparently going to find the reason on her laptop why she picked a fight, but I don't even remember what it was.
And then there was no good reason. It was just she was angry at him because he was an ass, and then what he ended up discovering was she really, really wants her kid in this preschool, so he goes and... And does something. And I guess that's all by way of explaining why he was talking to this class full of kids in the first place, or something.
Let me ask you this, Dawn. You're a woman.
It was terrible.
So you understand the rakish, roguish appeal of Gregory House in the abstract.
In the abstract.
You've said, I think, and that we all agree this is true. In real life, he probably smells. Mm-hmm. But I mean, as a character, you know, you can sort of understand he's the intelligent bad boy who's been hurt. As a female viewer, when you're watching House and an episode like last night happens, where there's that whole thing of him she says, take out the garbage, and he's like, nah, I'm not gonna. And he just gets on his motorcycle and drives off to work or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then later, he's just apologizing like some sort of a neutered house cat for not taking out the trash. Do you, just as a woman, do you find that unpleasant because they are just emasculating his character just in front of everybody? It's like they're making him a eunuch on a table while we watch.
I mostly just found it unpleasant because it was just ridiculous that they set up a situation. There's so many different ways they could address the inevitable problems that these two characters would be having in having a relationship. And what they choose is he used her toothbrush and then left it sitting on the counter.
And left the toilet seat up.
And he was a jerk about not taking the trash out. And I was like, so really that's it.
That's the rub.
That's what we've decided to go with, is it? Nothing having to do with maybe him being sort of indifferent to her child.
Yeah.
That she, of course, doesn't spend much time with anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
I don't even think it's been seen on camera.
Yeah.
For like a month. I think you just hear the kid. It's like Chrissy Snow on Three's Company. She's over the phone for some reason.
Or just the fact that he's just generally a jerk.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, I've been with my husband for going on 12 years now. I'm married to a man who is a very nice man and a very emotionally giving man and a man who actually is communicative and shares with me and tries to work stuff out. And yet, we have these days, where he will go for a day or so and everything that comes out of his mouth is just a little bit bitchy. And I will finally just look at him and go, hey, stop being a dick. Why are you acting like such a dick?
Right.
And this is with somebody who's really, really nice. So it's like, if you were actually in a relationship with House, you wouldn't need specific things like the trash or the toothbrush.
There doesn't need to be a triggering incident.
No, there would just be a point where it was like, you'd go, really? Does every single thing that comes out of your mouth have to be just that you're an a-hole?
Hey, here's a question. Maybe I've missed something. What is the deal with him no longer having leg pain? That's just gone. His leg pain apparently has just, or he's just suddenly fine with it. Did they ever really tell us how it is that vanished?
He got over his pill addiction, and now apparently his leg doesn't hurt as much anymore.
Which is funny, because I remember them explaining repeatedly in the first few seasons how, he was a drug addict, but that initially started because he was in excruciating pain all the time because he had this muscle death thing happen.
Right.
And the pain appears to have just be gone, or he's just, or he just grins his way through it.
And then just uses it to get out of taking the trash out.
Yeah.
Then.
Okay, I want to make sure I didn't miss anything
No.
there. Okay, we're all on the same page then, I guess. Okay.
Yeah.
Here's what we should probably do. We should probably take a break here. We'll come back on the other side. We'll talk Breaking Bad later because Breaking Bad, I think, is starting again next week, 2 weeks from now.
I'm not sure when it's starting, but yeah, we've got time. We've got time to talk about it.
So we should talk about that here just a bit because it's not tremendously timely. I do want to get to it later on today if we have the opportunity. We'll blue sky that.
Maybe Seth Aaron watches Breaking Bad. It's
entirely possible. By the way, Cheryl, I want you to note that she said, I will be watching Castle with Nathan Fillion in HD. Woot. There you go. Just FYI. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program coming up. We got your Snuff Watch, Taser Watch. Also, Mr. Seth Aaron's going to be joining us in the studio with the top 5 songs / artists that he works while listening to. We'll get your clue number 2 for your Name That Snack for each vending this week. Clue number 2 for this week's Name That Snack contest. And later on, we'll talk Breaking Bad and so forth, plus news and whatnot. Stay there. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We return after this. Go nowhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
not known the darkness, could not love the light. Were it not for gravity, there would be no flight. Then I've lost the path, I would never find my way. Equal part my heart I gave to bloom and to decay. With a rattle and a grind, I find it out back at my favorite part. Well, I may not be your kind if your kind is made of heart. When the world is sick and tired and expects you to fall apart. Maybe hanging by a thread, but now we're state of the art. Oh. I call upon my demons as I call upon my saints. I lend an equal ear to each and I suffer no complaints. When the fearless be your ushers and the shadows be your guide, the best way out of hell is through the other side. With a rattle and a grind, I find that I'm back at my favorite part. Well, I may not be your kind if your kind is made of heart. When the world is sick and tired and it begs you to fall apart.
Listening to the Emerson News Network.
Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like, if that's your pleasure. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Don Taylor can be reached at what email address, Don Taylor?
At Don. At rick Emerson. I can't say it now. rickemerson.com. That would be it.
We're professional broadcasters of the highest caliber and quality.
You took me by surprise. I wasn't ready to shift gears from thinking to talking.
You weren't ready to bring it at quite that level?
Thanks.
Okay.
I weren't ready with the words.
Me no talk pretty. Dawn at rickemerson.com. That is D-A-W-N at rickemerson.com. The text box is open on the website, and also you can Skype if you like. That is Rick Emerson Show at Skype. Rick Emerson Show is the username there. Coming up in mere moments, we will welcome Mr. Seth Aaron to the program. Coming up later in the day, we got your snuff watch, taser watch, and so forth. It is 503-505-6964. We've also got clue number two coming up this week for the EH Vending Name That Snack Contest and so forth. By the way, somebody, Dawn has asked, we were just talking about Cheryl and her brand new television. Somebody was asking what the first television program... This is an unfair question, though, because somebody asked what the first television program was that you watched on your brand new, on you know, when you got the big screen moved into your house. But it's actually not hooked up to the TV as
no.
such.
No, I actually just watch... I think what the first thing I did was hook it up to the DVD player. And I watched something on the DVD player, and I can't remember what it is now. I'm really not sure. I wish I could tell you. I don't remember.
There's more of that talking.
I'm thinking and trying to think. I wish I had something clever to say. I know that over the course of the first few days of having the brand new giant TV, I watched some like episodes of Fringe that I still had backed up. We watched Scott Pilgrim again.
I would strongly recommend
a couple of Pixar movies.
Avoid anything starring Cameron Diaz. You got to work up to that. If you're watching like an HD sort of it, look at it. You know, it's not like I'm. And it's not like I'm anybody's bellwether for pretty, but it's just it can be a jarring experience if you leap right into the Cameron Diaz viewing.
I have noticed that with some shows now that if I'm watching television and I'm watching it on the huge television, and I will now notice the amount of makeup that has been slathered on some of the stars.
Let me just tell you about Stone Phillips. If you watch Stone Phillips on TV, if you watch him on HD, it's like you can just see that they've got the full on troweling going with that guy. I mean, they've got some sort of cosmetic gun that they're using on him in the back room.
Well, they're just slathering it on. He might have the same thing going on that Cameron Diaz has, where she had a problem with acne. She has apparently a face like the surface of the moon, and they have this putty that they will use to actually fill in and sort of buff down people's faces.
What a strange moment that must be when they tell you they're going to be using putty on your face. Huh. Say, hold on a second, we've got some grouting that we're going to do here.
Like when you have a small dent in your car and you use the Bondo, it's a little like that.
All right, let's walk out of the Rick Emerson radio program. His designs can be found at myriad locations and events, including 2010's Portland Fashion Week. He's also the winner of Project Runway's 7th Season and calls the thriving metropolis of Vancouver, Washington, his home. Mr. Seth Aaron, hello, sir. How are you today?
Hey, Rick. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Can I concur, by the way, with something that Dawn said before we came back on the air, but which we have not noted here on the program, which is that there's no way to get around this. You smell fantastic. So, sometimes the truth is so self-evident that it must be commented upon.
No, you are the best smelling guest we've had so far.
So I smell like a French hooker. Is that what you're saying?
Well, a very expensive French hooker.
Hooker. Okay, I mean, escorts, callgirls, paid companion. It's been a few weeks since we had you on Outlook Portland, and I was talking to Dawn about this appearance. And when we were getting ready to do the Outlook Portland show, it was funny that everybody I talked to about you coming on as a guest, and everybody I talked to about that season of Runway, immediately they all had the same reaction. They would just sort of clench their fists, and then they would launch into some sort of a speech about how glad they were, that you had won, and why they thought that it was fantastic. Because people really, I mean, do people continue to act as though it's almost a competition even now that it's over? In other words, when they talk to you, are they still really, really, really invested in you or in disliking other people who are on?
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of show it is. People do invest in you the way it's filmed, and we're portrayed as who we really are. So when they meet you in person or I meet them, it's like it takes them right back to watching the show because, you know, a lot of times you'll meet someone from a movie, and they're just totally different than what you see on screen. So that's one thing I really liked about it, that they didn't distort us too much.
you didn't feel like they went into the editing room and they thought, I will make him look like a bastard and just cut things together just to...
No, I mean, you know, like when you're in that, it is a reality-based competition show, but it's not a reality-based scripted, let's get drunk and see how much shit we can start. You know, so that, there's a lot of the shows out there like that where they just throw a bunch of people in a room. This is actually based off of, just like Idol, it's based off of a talent that people have.
Well, you told the greatest story about, I think the question was, when were you first aware of fashion? Or when did you first register that something had a particular kind of style? You told the greatest story about your... Tough Skins? Have I got the story right?
Yeah, Tough Skins.
So you were how old when this happened?
The Tough Skins thing was like from 6 to 10, really. You know, it was that era where that was the pant.
And did you just look at you just opened your wardrobe one day as you were heading off to a first grade and you went, I can't do anything with this.
Well, honestly, they were the hip thing then for kids to wear, but. It never was just right. I think I had to change them up a little bit, whether that means.
And was it you that you were you talking to your mom? Did you carry your Tough Skins up to your mom and go, do you have an iron and maybe some medium starch? I've got to do something with these.
Yeah, well, I learned. Actually, I went to my mother about 7 or 8. I think it was around 7 and asked her she showed me how to iron. So I would do it all myself.
And so was it a thing that you started doing like top to bottom with your wardrobe?
Yeah.
I mean, were you before, you know?
Well, I mean, you don't iron your clothes. You go dirt biking in, but you know, you come home and you change. You don't just get into the car and go out to a movie.
The Tough Skins, and I don't know if there's a female equivalent for this. Probably not. But Tough Skins wear this denim jean from Sears, I think.
Yeah,
I think it was
Roebuck,
the Sears Roebuck. It might still be the... And the Tough Skins, and it was like always... The other thing was it was always right next to a huge sign. I always felt bad for these kids. Next to a huge sign that said, Husky. And that was for your larger child. But I remember wearing these Tough Skins every day. Green Tough Skins at that. I mean, literally Mr. Green Jeans because that was what you had to wear
green,
at my Catholic
brown,
school.
Green, blue, red, you
terrible.
Name it.
And then you would wear out the knees. And then your mom would go, no problem there. We'll patch them. And
they made a Tough Skin iron-on patch that you could buy at the Sears to put over.
And then it would and then occasionally, like, the patch would wear out. And so then you're, like, patching over the patch. And it just becomes like you're counting the rings in a tree or something on your
right.
on your jeans.
Yeah, you have armor on your knees.
Yeah. And I remember just looking at that and just thinking, well, you know, I guess I'm just going to look horrid for several years. There's nothing I can do about this. Whereas you probably, I mean, did you start figuring out ways to alter the clothes that you – because when you're a kid, you don't have fancy clothes, but
– Right. No, well, I figured out ways to add things to them, whether that – you know, and I didn't sew real well. You know, I watched my mother do it, but I would ask my mom to put this on there, you know, whether it be a patch or whether it be, you know, buttons or whatever to make them different than everybody else's.
When you're going to school and you're, you know, 7, 8, 9 years of age and you're, you know, and you're wearing clothes that you've, you know, where you had an idea for something or you had your mom help you with something and you're standing out and to some degree standing out is just that in and of itself is enough to get you picked on. Did you ever have a problem with other kids in school because you're wearing something that doesn't look like everybody else?
No, I mean, sometimes I guess, but I didn't really have any problems with other kids. I mean, I had a lot of friends in every area, I would say, you know, whether they're in the hip hop scene or the punk rock scene or whatever, you know, I had friends in all different areas. So I was just kind of that kid that got along with everybody.
People would, and I think I probably would. You think of a guy who becomes a designer, and you have such a distinct sense of style, and so I imagine you in high school, you know, much as you do now, smelling, you know, fantastic, and then looking great, as opposed to most people who look back at their high school photos and go, God, and it's just.
I think everybody looks back at their photos and say,
but
why?
Do you? I mean, do you look back at your high school photos and go, what was I thinking?
There's been a couple, yeah. It just depends on where it was, you know, whether it was in California high school photos or whether it was in the Northwest high school photos. I don't know. There was so many different phases, like the whole 90s grunge thing that went on. I mean, I liked the music and I was into it, but I look back at some of the flannel and I said, why?
This is actually
and that's never gone away here. I've noticed.
Well,
about
I mean,
Portland.
I wear flannel like old cowboy shirt flannel. But I, you know, I'm talking about the hood with the fleece inside and
well,
everything.
Like,
that whole thing
knotted around your waist. And it was always like a guy with like cargo shorts and then a flannel shirt tied around his waist.
I just saw him on the corner when
yeah.
I came in.
Yeah, it's that guy is everywhere. This is actually a chance to ask something that I have wondered for the longest time. We look back at the '60s and you think, you know, whatever your peace sign or your Nehru jacket
right.
or something. Your '70s,
your
disco pants and whatever. In the '80s, you know, I just think of you know the Michael
shoulder
Jackson
pads.
Stuff and shoulder pads and everything looked like a Nagel print. So what are we going to look at in the 90s that's like that? I mean, other than flannel. I mean,
in the 90s, I mean, there's so many. The Cosby's classic. I mean, all the multi-primary color mixed media clothing.
I think it was Sarah said cross colors, and I didn't know.
How about a double-breasted, yeah. That's coming back, actually, but not so loud.
Is it? Is that one of those things that we're sort of mocking now because we lived through it? But in 15 years, there's going to be some kid going flannel and cross colors. No, it's the best thing ever. You have to put it on.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll revamp itself at some point. It'll be hopefully slightly different, but it always revamps somehow.
We're here with Mr. Seth Aarons, the winner of Project Runway Season 7, and also you can find him online at Seth Aaron Designs. That is the website that is SethAaronDesigns.com. You know what it is.
Look at you spelling.
You know, that's one of those things that's a skill that you think you have, and then you try it, and it just doesn't – it fails miserably.
Not so much.
Dawn Taylor?
God, I don't know. Fashion, I have to say, is not really my my wheelhouse, being as I'm someone who doesn't have much money and I'm short and round. So it doesn't really affect me much. Like, I was having a conversation with my husband not too long ago. A issue of Vogue magazine made it into my home. And I said, most of this is not really for me. And he looked at me and he said, well, you might win the lottery and get cancer. So,
yeah, nice.
Okay.
All righty then.
But I do want to say, I actually love your designs because your stuff is very, very wearable. And I don't know how much of that is from basically you are working out of Vancouver. You're not working out of, say, Manhattan. Are you designing specifically with a thought in mind of a particular customer base that you want people to be able to just, actually wear your clothes?
Well, there's different levels. There's runway shows, even the finale of my season, many of the pieces could be separated and worn, but many of them could not. As a whole, it made a show. In runway, there's, when you do an editorial show, most of it, it's more of an art form of expression, and it needs to be translated down into ready-to-wear, which you'll find on your shelf.
Yeah, and I was going to ask about that because there's been a lot of stuff on the internet recently from recent runway shows, and I wonder how much of particularly the runway stuff on that level is marketing to make a name and to show trends rather than specific pieces, because a lot of the stuff that I've seen photographs of lately doesn't really look like it would be wearable by anyone.
Well, right. I mean, and like all the European shows, you know, unless it's ready to wear, aligned to be sold to stores, it's unwearable. I mean,
it's a publicity device.
Yeah, yeah. It's your creative outlook, just like an abstract painting or
whatever. It's like the restaurant that has the $1,300 sundae. Or something, it's just so somebody from CNN will come and go, and this Sunday costs $1,300, and it really is. It's a thing that's just there to get people sort of
right.
in the door.
Right now I'm working on my ready to wear, which I'm showing in LA at LA Fashion Week March 12th, and that's going to be a ready to wear line. So mm-hmm. everything in that show is to be purchased by buyers right off the runway. So it's going to be very modern, wearable for a mass market.
Is it how unusual is it that you don't live in New York or L.A.?
How often do I get asked that?
Well, I guess
<'cause> that too.
Because 4,200 times a day.
I saw somebody ask Eric Bogosian, the playwright, one time. They said he was on Larry King or something, and they called him. I want to act in some of that theater. And he said, well, where do you live? In Lewiston, Idaho. And he said, okay, no. He's like, if you're going to be in theater, it happens in L.A. or New York, period, at a certain level. You're not going to do that in Idaho. So is it a recent thing that, you could be in Vancouver and work in the fashion world, or is it still?
Well, I think it makes it It makes it what it is because of Runway, because being on national television. You can. I mean, it's definitely more accessible to things if you lived in L.A. or if you lived in Manhattan where you could walk out your door, you could meet with a client, you know, everything at your fingertips. But it's not unmanageable to live here and do it. Like right now, you know, I have two agents. I have a PR person. I have, you know, they're doing all the promotion and footwork. I can live here, design the collection, take it to the factory, and that's that. So...
How many times a day do you does somebody go, what about that? What about that Gretchen?
You know, I don't like to badmouth any other designer.
Rick Emerson's not asking you to badmouth. I'm just wondering if that's a thing.
Well, that's a daily question. And again, I've said it before. I've met her on a few different occasions, and she's a nice person. You know, I think the heat of competition, the lack of sleep, you know, can get people to act out a little bit.
Did you ever feel like that? I mean, did you ever feel like you were just in a pressure cooker? Because you've said that you work best under pressure.
Yeah.
Did you ever feel like you were not changing as a person, but you were behaving in ways that you wouldn't normally, or that you were, you know, you might say the wrong thing, you might do the wrong thing?
No. No, I kind of just say what I want.
I was actually curious about one particular technical aspect of the show, which is where you get pulled aside to do the one-on-one interviews.
Mm-hmm.
And does that get factored into your time, or is that just...
Everybody's pulled out equal amount of time. So they don't all happen at once. It happens periodically. But...
Did they cut you some slack as to when they pulled you out? Like if you were in the middle of something and you were like, really, no, I don't want to do this now? Or was
No, pretty much. They'll come down ahead of time and just say, you know, you're up in an hour or 2 hours or whatever. And, I mean, that's just part of the gig.
Yeah.
You know, some people didn't want to go, but they were drug out. You know what I mean? Just like eating dinner is mandatory. You have to take a half hour to... in the evening to eat dinner. You don't have to eat breakfast. You don't have to eat lunch, but you have to eat dinner.
Did they have to keep reminding you to call it the Tresemme Hair Salon and the Bluefly.com wall?
Right, all those. No, that's kind of, we had a lot of fun. I mean, you got to find things to entertain yourself while you're there. Screen with the sound people, the cameramen, the making the extra larger than life plugs on their sponsor of the show, and they'd be all like, "All right, we heard it," you know, and we'd just go back and forth and just to make us laugh because we're stuck in a room, we're isolated from the world, you know.
Do you forget, you know, being stuck in the room and you're there for, you know, you're in this pressure cooker and you're working, you know, long hours and everybody's focused on winning. But you're kind of cut. You're in this very public scenario, but you're also cut off from the outside world in a certain way. Do you really forget the cameras are there? People talk about, well, after a while, you don't even know the cameras are there.
Yeah,
is that true?
In my case, I mean, a lot of people that were freaked out by them because they've never been put in that environment. I've been in the television, film, fashion industry for 11 years before going on that. So I'm used to cameras being around, stands, multiple people, producers. I'm just used to – that's home for me. So I walked in and I didn't even notice them. I just went to work.
Is it true that your wife got you your first sewing machine 5 years ago, 6 years ago, something like that?
But yeah, it was six – or this December will be 6 years ago, I think.
And really, was that the push – was that just to push you into, look, you got to, you know,
that
you got to really
that
do
was,
it?
She got that for so I would stop talking about it and bitching. And, you know, I was so focused on just work and the family, but I would always complain about, I want to do this, but I would never go do it. Like, at that point, I was like, I'm not going to go dump $1,100 on a sewing machine,
right. You
know, because it's like, you don't want a pile of crap. You want the best to start, you know, proper tools. So for Christmas, yeah, it was under my tree. I was stoked because I would never go do that for myself, but she did it for me.
If she hadn't gotten that, do you think that you would have? Do you think you would be here right now if she hadn't gotten you that sewing machine?
That's a good question. I've always been driven to do what I want to do. I do it. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. No, let's give her the credit. Let's give her the credit.
Absolutely.
See, that's the key to a long and happy relationship,
listening.
Right there. There you go. So, what else? What's next for you? What's on the horizon?
I'm just working on my fall 2011 line as we speak. I left something halfway done, came here. And actually, I go to Mondo and I, we just finished, we were at Rhode Island last week speaking at the university.
You guys do a lot of stuff together. Is that a thing where they specifically request?
Yeah.
You guys?
Yeah, because our agent in LA, he reps the majority of runway people, whether they win or lose. And yeah, they requested us as a duo to come there. And we've done two things now like that. And actually, we both are flying to Los Angeles tomorrow for the Oscars. We're going to do several different events through the between, you know, Thursday and Saturday.
And then you're doing the, I think we can talk about this, you're doing the Dove Lewis
Yeah, they contacted me again, and I said, you know, I'd love to work with you guys again.
Is this where they give you the mystery? Is it the... because every year, Dove Lewis, they have their therapy dogs and cats, and then every year they have a therapy animal that is... They had a therapy llama, and
yeah,
they had
llama
a therapy...
bunny.
They had a therapy bunny, and so every year it's what is the therapy animal going to be, and it's something sort of
bizarre. I'm hoping for a hamster or a lizard.
So they just... Is it a thing where you get, like, the envelope with the nuclear launch code, and you put it, Gila monster, excellent, and then
right.
He's back to the lab?
Komodo dragon.
Awesome.
I don't think a therapy Komodo dragon would be a good idea for anyone,
well,
really.
You know, that's really the clothes...
Well, that's kind of narrow-minded, Don.
The clothes make
You're
the
right.
dragon, Don.
I'm apparently, it turns out, I'm anti-dragon.
Don't hate. We're here with Mr. Seth Aaron. You can find out more about him. His website is Seth Aaron Designs. It is SethAaronDesigns.com. So you have assembled, we'll do this top five here in a second, which did I hand that
you did.
To you? So this is the top five, I think the top five songs the five songs you would most often be working to or that you would have playing in the background.
Well, there's a few in there that are classics. Maybe there's only one. I don't know. I let them down. But, yeah, it's really what I'm listening to now, what I'm into, the newer bands that, you know, maybe have just become popular in the last 6 months or a year, or maybe they're not even that huge yet. It's what I'm listening to when I'm working and so on, yeah.
And music, especially a certain kind of 70s and 80s sort of glam trash look, that informs a lot of what you do. Well, I'm just saying you've taken a variety of different and disparate influences and distilled them into your own exacting approach toward fashion and style, sir.
Put well.
There you go. See, that's right there.
Well, I was going to say, do you change up the music depending on the styles that you're working on, you know, the themes that you're working on right now, or does the music inform the design or vice versa?
A little of everything, really. It puts you in the zone.
And really, I'll say this. This is one of those things where if we were televised, everybody would sort of understand what I'm talking about. But I'll put it this way. Let's see. So Seth and I are both wearing basically black shoes, blue jeans, black T-shirt, and we've both got, you know, some like jewelry and bracelets, whatever. I look like I just came out of a Woolworths. I look like a sort of like a clearance counter at a Payless exploded onto me. You look as you are, as though an actual designer put that together who knew what they were talking about.
Uncomfortable.
See, and you say that, but I'm not trying to dismiss that. I'm really not. I'm just saying it's like I was talking to somebody today who's a comic book artist, and I was expressing, you know, amazement that he could draw someone. He goes, "Oh, it's easy." And I was like, "Well, it's easy to you because you can do it." People who draw or people who dance or sing or, you know, have some sort of a skill, I think it is a thing that other people, and I don't know if I'm speaking for Dawn as well, but other people look at that and it just seems like knowing somebody who can speak Mandarin Chinese, where it's impressive and mystifying all at once.
Well, he's very rock and roll. You are like the coolest guy in the parking lot at Target.
Thank you.
That was
nice. I'm the king of this 7-Eleven.
This is
awesome.
My big goal.
ladies and gentlemen, it's time to roll today's top five with Mr. Seth Aaron.
Five, four, three, two, one, fire.
Counting is wonderful. Counting is marvelous. Counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness. Counting is ecstasy. I love to count, don't you?
Is the, for a moment, I think you thought we had entirely the wrong list.
Yeah.
It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We're here with Mr. Seth Aaron. Find out more about him by going to SethAaronDesigns.com. It is SethAaronDesigns.com. So, Don, we'll start with number five.
Number five is Black Veil Brides, Mortician's Daughter.
in my lungs, dear. I sing this song at funerals, no rush. These lyrics heard a thousand times, just plush.
So I don't think I've heard this. I don't think I've heard this before. So tell me a little bit about this.
Well, the Brides are fairly new. They just signed with Universal in the last 6 months, and they're basically that. This is their softest song they have, but it's just kind of one of those ones I listen to late at night. But they're a cross between Motley Crue and Marilyn Manson.
Here's the thing that I never get tired of. I am a sucker for rock guys who have, like, the aberrant song with strings behind it.
Yeah.
You just take a band where normally they're, you know, I don't know, they're talking about, you know, drugs and Satan and, you know, whatever. And then they have the song, which is usually but not always a ballad, and then the string section comes in behind it.
Yeah,
that's the way to my heart.
Classic,
every time.
Crew right here.
Yeah, exactly. Were you influenced by that kind of Sunset Strip era?
Big hair bands?
Yeah, just, you know, that kind of, when I say the sort of trashy, but trashy in a very specific kind of glamorous, glitzy way.
I was into that big scream hair band after it was cool. In other words, when it was at its height and everybody was, I wasn't into it at all, no.
Is it, at the time, were you just into something else, or you just hadn't given it a chance, or
was it still doing punk rock and wave and that kind of stuff?
I was actually just the other day, I was watching a little bit of A Decline of Western Civilization Part 2 for reasons that escape me now. And I think it was like, saw an interview with Lemmy or something, and he was mentioning that movie. And I went back and watched part of it. And it's interesting to look at that era and see how much of that stuff has bled into today.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's things from 1986, 1987, all of that stuff that you would see at like the Cat House and Gazzari's and all those places that has sort of leached into fashion as it exists now. We're here with Mr. Seth Aaron. These are the top five songs that he brought with him. Top five songs to which he designs, thinks, schemes, imagines, and dreams. Ladies and gentlemen, Don Taylor.
Number four.
Well done.
Marilyn Manson, Tainted Love.
Here's the thing about Marilyn Manson. You just mentioned being into some of the big hair bands, sort of glam rock of the 80s after it had gone out of fashion. That's kind of how I was with Marilyn Manson. I resisted being into Marilyn Manson for the longest time, largely because I grew up as a huge Alice Cooper fan. And
yeah.
I just saw him as being a little bit of a knockoff of Alice Cooper, and I don't think I really gave him a fair chance. I think I judged him right away and stuck him in a category in my head, and I viewed him as being sort of a Stone Temple Pilots to Alice Cooper's Pearl Jam. You know, I viewed him as being a bad clone of something. And then when he put out Mechanical Animals,
yeah,
and I saw the video, not even just the song, which is great, but I saw the video for The Dope Show.
That's creepy.
And it was just such a great, great song. And it really reminded me of like a slowed down, angry kind of a Ziggy Stardust sort of a thing. And that was when I heard that album, that's when I just thought, well, I can't say anything bad about this guy because he clearly is not a one-trick pony. And here's the thing about Marilyn Manson, and it's not... It actually doesn't surprise me at all that he's on this list because he is a guy who so carefully crafts every aspect of his image.
Yeah.
And not just the visual aesthetic, but the way he positions himself, the way that his albums are titled. He's great with names and he's great with phrases.
Well, and he does all the artwork himself, too.
And, he has a... Clearly, that is a guy that... There's no record company who was packaging him in for everybody. He had a hand, a very strong hand in his own imagery and creation.
Yeah, I concur.
He's also one of those guys that has a very limited vocal range and a very tight, kind of a narrow singing style, but he knows how to use his voice in the best possible way.
Does the best with what he has. As somebody once said about Keith Richards, he can't sing, but in a really fantastic way.
Right. He just looks great.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know...
I think...
I think if you're a guy like Marilyn Manson or, you know, a guy like Keith Richards who
effectively just sort of is a pirate and always has been. I think that covers myriad sins. We're doing the top five with Mr. Seth Aaron Danton.
I'm all confused number-wise here. Number three, Nina Hagen, 99 Luftballons.
There was a whole
German version.
There was a whole kerfuffle that happened with the top five, but we recovered well.
It doesn't matter.
Fix it all.
We're all good.
That's right.
And I'm glad you're going with the German version, by the way.
That's the only way to go with this. First time I heard this when I was a kid, and it's been one of my all-time favorites. I don't know why, forever. It's always been in my category.
What was the first band or the first artist that really made a big impact
Beatles.
On you? Really?
Yeah, still have them.
How did you
Stones too.
How'd you discover? Was it
12th birthday. I got the both the Stones and the Beatles two albums, and that was my
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a great 1-2 punch. Most people start with Starship, you know, and then it's, you know.
What's that?
Yeah, that was like my first, the first album I bought with my own money, actually, when I got like a gift certificate, I think literally to Woolworths. I was like, oh, this is great. I'm going to go buy my own music. And I bought that, like, We Built This City record just because,
okay. Now I know what that is.
I think I'd heard on the radio and, like, some guy at school had gone, no, it's awesome, dude. And I was like, okay, he must know. And I,
Sticks.
You know, or whatever. Yeah, and just.
My very first album I bought, we were at Sears, and my dad told me that I could buy a record, and I had no clue what to buy. And I went over and I bought the Beatles Abbey Road because I recognized the cover.
Yeah, I got the white album. And I think that's the one I got. Yeah.
See, why is it that everybody else starts with, yeah, I got, you know, Never Mind the Bollocks. I got Sgt. Pepper. And it's like I'm there listening to, you know, listening to Sarah by Starship in my room and just wondering, why don't people think I'm cool?
Yeah, my second album was like a Neil Diamond live album. So
I saw Neil Diamond 3 years ago here in Portland.
Yeah, I've never seen him live.
That show was crazy good.
Oh, God.
Is there, here's the thing about being a designer. You're at a point, you know, where you can, you know, you can start saying, well, you know, here's somebody I'd really like to design for. Here's somebody that I'd really like to create
right.
something for. Is there a musician that is on your, you know, sort of your, you know, your, the dream job of designing for?
Yeah, there's a list and there's a few in the works. Well, The Brides for one, I mean, they're an upcoming band, but I went to their show here and as their guest and we're talking about future projects for them. But there's a couple other like mega ones and then there's some old school ones too. So I guess any will work.
Mr. Seth Aaron is here. His website is SethAaronDesigns.com. We're cutting down the top five. Don Taylor, what is number two?
Number two, Semi-Precious Weapons.
Yes.
I Can't Pay the Rent.
You're going to like this one, Rick. These guys opened for Gaga 4 or 5 months ago.
I think Ryan White, who's the music editor from the Oregonian, may have mentioned these guys as being out on tour with her.
They're badass, yeah.
I can't pay my rent, but I'm gorgeous.
I love this.
See, here's
their whole album's like this. It's fantastic. They're old school rock, but modern glam. He has like 8-inch rhinestone stiletto boots, and he's like tall. He's like my height, 6'1", 6'2".
Wow.
So he's like a monster on stage. It's such a show.
Here's the thing about this song and this band is I don't really know a whole lot about them. I don't know that I could even pick them out of a lineup. I don't think I know what they look like. But hearing this song, this is why it's great, because you hear the song and you immediately, you feel like you know what they look like. You get a distinct image of the band because they, you know, and that's the thing about, like, there's certain, they always say about, like, they'll talk about guys being talk about radio guys sometimes and they'll say, you know, the thing to have is, like, if you have presence on the microphone. Like, anybody can sit behind a mic and talk, but some people have presence, a sort of charisma, and some people don't. And so it is with musicians. You can hear two guys who seem fundamentally the same sing the same song. Or you hear two bands that on paper seem like they ought to be the same. And there's one of those bands just has a certain intangible... Just a certain intangible something.
Showmanship.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is.
And just a thing that you can't... Yeah, it's just there, and you can't even really qualify or quantify what it is. But it's funny, when we played this, and your eyes lit up, and you said, I really like this.
She did.
I will say that sometimes, and every guy knows what I'm talking about, where sometimes you will listen to a record, and, you know, you listen to a guy like this, and suddenly... If you didn't know before, it all becomes so crystal clear why girls want to F all the guys in bands like this. I mean, you just hear, you know, it's like you hear, and if you're here, and if you're 14 or, you know, 15 or something, you see that guy and you go, that's a good job being that guy. I got to get me a guitar. Because you can just, yeah. I had a friend of mine actually, is a friend of my dad's, and you don't really hear a lot of, like, sage wisdom normally from, like, the friends of your dad's. Because normally the friends of my dad's, like, their whole thing was just to hang around and make me go get Bloody Marys for them from the kitchen. But there was this guy. Well, you know, that's what you have kids for, basically. They're, kids are, I think, maids and drink servers for large sections of the American populace. Don?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And occasionally go to the store and get mommy some smokes. but I met this guy named, I think his name was Jerry, and he was a friend of my dad's, and he was hanging out one night. He told, I forget what even prompted this, but he told the story about actually seeing Elvis Presley in concert when he was, when he Jerry was like, I don't know, he was like 10 or 11 or something. And Elvis had come to wherever he was living, Seattle or something. And he saw Elvis perform, I guess, relatively early in his career. And I asked him, and I don't think I was that old, but I mean, I knew that Elvis was a big deal. And I said, what was it like? What was, like, what is it like to see Elvis? And he was a little lit at that point in the evening. And he just said, he goes, well, you know, it's like, I'm straight, but I totally would have effed that guy. I mean, I'm not even lying, you know. And then he just like went back to finishing his Olympia or whatever.
I think there's an entire generation of teenage boys who felt that way about David Lee Roth.
Also, Robert Plant. Mm. Even now, I'm telling you right now, he's like 70 years old and wrinkly.
Well, that's like this cat. You said about the girls for this. Yeah, they probably do, but I don't think that's his avenue.
No.
And yet it won't stop a lot of ladies from trying.
Right?
I'm just saying, you know. I'm just saying that, like, if Robert Plant were here now, you know, I mean, he basically looks like a walnut with hair at this point. But it doesn't, you know, like, if Robert Plant was here and...
hey, Rick.
Be my gentleman friend, Rick, I think I might have to... I mean, look, how many people can possibly say that? 30, 40,000 at most.
yeah.
Who am I to not put myself on the list? After all Robert Plant has done for me, how could I not give back, Don?
Just get yourself a prescription for penicillin and go crazy.
We're here with Mr. Seth Aaron. His website is setharondesigns.com. Thank you, by the way, for bringing this top five. This is one of the best things that people can do when they come to the show because it just gives you a window into who somebody is. So,
well, yeah, it's kind of cool too because everybody's going to have a different outlook on it. Mm-hmm. So
that and the many personal, painful questions Rick asks about your childhood.
Yeah, right.
It's just
that just comes with the territory.
Tell us again about your pain wearing the tough skins.
Oh God, the pain.
See, here's the thing about the tough skins, though. The thing about the tough skins is that everybody was wearing, at least when I grew up. I don't know how it was in California, but in my hometown, largely because a lot of kids went to this Catholic school. Everybody had to wear the uniform, and so everybody wore these horrible, hideous tough skins. So it's like
Well, that was back in, like, what, the late 70s?
Yeah, 70s, early 80s.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it was in California. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or in San Diego.
So I don't think I really became aware of the fact that I dressed badly until I entered high school, because I went to high school. I was in Catholic school all the way through 8th grade. And then it's like you're thrown into it. Not only your face is all spotty and you look bad, I had a mullet, and I just looked terrible. And then I'm also in a public high school.
I never had a mullet.
Oh, dude, I had the full-on... Well, you've seen it.
Oh, yeah.
Mullet and, like, bad... I mean, again, it was like every...
Maybe I had the Duran Duran mullet, but...
and he went to school sometimes dressed like Paul Stanley.
From Kiss.
Nice.
With the makeup on.
But, you know, but even that was done poorly. Like, the stars all slanty and just not centered properly. But it was, like, just thrown into the deep end because it's like I look terrible anyway because I'm a teenager. I have no idea what I'm doing. Girls walk by and I just go like, ah! And then also, it's like I have never had to dress myself before because... It was like you just wore all the same horrible crap from Sears that all of the other kids were made to wear in Catholic school. You know, it was like...
What about the OP shorts?
The
shorty shorts? Yeah.
And the dolphin shorts, too. Mm-hmm.
Dolphin shorts, dude. Here's the thing about that is like... And again, I say, did you guys ever? But I know that you probably didn't. It's probably no, Rick, it's just you. Where, like... It's what my wife would call the tyranny of choice, where once I was no longer in private school, once I was in public school, and it was like, I could wear anything. I mean, you know, whatever I could calm my parents into buying or whatever I could buy once I got a job. But that didn't change the fact that I had no idea what to buy. And so I would just sit there and I'd go, Well, these satiny kind of clingy shorts seem to be they look good on this mannequin, and they seem to be the advertising makes it look as though this is really a strong fashion choice for me. Maybe I'll buy this and 15 of these gotcha T-shirts, you know, and somehow thinking that was going to work. And, you know, no, not so much.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. We're filling it for you, buddy.
The tone of voice there is the Rick, you are beyond help. It is too late for you, Rick. Nothing can be done. What is number one of the top five?
Off with your head.
Number one, the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, Heads Will Roll.
Speaking of off with your head.
Do you have like a home studio, or do you have a place outside your home where you?
No,
where you
I like it
now?
At my house. It's totally separate, but it's connected.
Do you? So is Vancouver where you plan to stay for the foreseeable future? I bought this house.
I don't know, 5 months ago or whatever. Plan on keeping that, even if I buy another one elsewhere, which Actually. I do plan on doing. So.
Dad, too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I imagine that your kids would very much like to stay, you know, where they are.
To a degree. My daughter, I think, once a week says, can we get the... She wants to go to Los Angeles, sunny, you know? So we plan, like I said, we plan on keeping our house here and hopefully getting one elsewhere in maybe a year or two. They're actually freshmen in high school now, so we don't have that much longer until they're off to whatever college they're going to.
When you grew up in San Diego, do you plan on, I think you mentioned you plan on going back there at some, is that where you ultimately see yourself ending up however many years down the line? Or?
Maybe when I retire, you know, but for right now, I mean, as a working career, no, I picked more Los Angeles. It's close enough too.
Well, you lived in San Diego for a while.
I came here from San Diego, yeah.
So you realize, you know that there's really not a lot going on there.
And, you know,
really.
But my wife and I, ever since we lived in San Diego, I mean, we've been here for 13 years or something. But I mean, we've always just sort of assumed that at some point, you know, at whatever point in the future, we will live there again. You know,
yeah,
I don't know if we'll retire there, but I mean, we do plan on living there again because it's a beautiful place. It really is just, and it's within driving distance of LA, but you're not in LA because
right.
LA just.
It LA, can be overwhelming.
It's just a grimy, gritty place sometimes where you just feel like the sun is just bleaching the soul from your body.
Santa Barbara is nice, too. And that's close enough.
Santa Barbara's one of those places that I drive past or through and I go, oh, look, I can't ever afford to live here. And then,
right.
You know, and then I just... I was actually just listening to this song, and there's sort of a common thread that goes through a lot of the songs in this list. And probably, I would imagine, a lot of the artists that influenced you is that they all have that... I don't want to say it's spooky, but it's that goth is also the wrong word for it. But it's that sort of dark theatricality.
Yeah, it's dark, definitely. I think you're on that.
I can just see any number of the girls after whom I lusted in high school sitting in their bedroom with the blinds drawn, writing sort of Plathian poetry to themselves while listening to this. I'm just in my own little thing over here.
No, it's true. It's true.
I quit going to my shrink,
even
and
my
so
movies,
I just bring it here. Yeah.
Even my favorite movies. I mean, it's all going to lean. It leans this way, definitely.
It's all just Heathers and River's Edge.
Death and destruction.
What are your favorite movies?
Oh God, there's so many. I'm a fan of Tarantino, Rodriguez. So all their films, The Grindhouse Films, everything. But I like comedies a lot too, even like romantic comedies or whatever. There's several that are just cool.
It's hard for me to imagine you sitting around like giggling to a Kate Hudson, Matthew McConaughey rom-com.
I like McConaughey.
Yeah,
yeah, I do.
We have this
Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan
Reynolds is awesome.
Matthew McConaughey is sort of like our thing about Woody Harrelson. In that, we like him, but we think he probably smells fairly bad. Matthew McConaughey seems like a guy who needs a good scrub.
I know he does.
Really?
Oh,
Wait,
yeah.
Are we talking to Harrelson or McConaughey?
Both.
Really? Have you been? Has the proximity been close enough that you could?
No, I've just. It's all rumor.
You just
all
sense.
Word of mouth.
It's all over the street.
Word in the industry is.
The grapevine is abuzz with rumors that Matthew McConaughey smells awful. Mr. Seth Aaron, the website is SethAaronDesigns.com. SethAaronDesigns.com. Thank you for coming and tolerating our juvenile foolishness, my friend.
Right.
We'll be back after this with more. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Don't go anywhere. We're back in just a moment.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Listen up. I brought you all here to recite the annual obituaries. Like every year, we'll start with A and we'll end with Z. All right, is the band ready?
Ready.
All right, hit it, Boyles.
A one and a two.
B is for Amber who drowned in a pool. B is for Billy who was eaten by ghouls. C is for Kurt with disease of the brain. D is for Daniel derailed on a train. E is for Eric who's buried alive. F is for Frank who was stabbed through the eye. G is for Craig who died in the womb. H is for Heather who was sealed in a tomb.
One by one we wipe the dust. Kick the bucket and begin to rust. Cue up the ghost when your number's up. We all fall down. Ashes to ashes, bones to paste. You'll wither away in your resting place. Eternity in a wooden case. We all fall down.
K is for Kimmy some glass.
News Network.
Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964. Now the whole studio smells like Seth Aaron.
He smelled really good.
He really did.
It wasn't like a hippie patchouli kind of a thing, but
no.
It was something kind of spicy and incense-ish. And
notes of pepper.
Very nice.
It was one of those things where I felt like it would have been awkward to ask us a follow-up, because you said something like, what? And before we were even on the air, he came in and you said, like, you smell, you're the nicest smelling man I've ever met. And he said, oh, it's blah, blah, blah.
Oh, did
and
he? Did he say? No.
But see, that thing is, he did say what it was.
Yeah.
Because I heard like a.
Thanks to somebody.
I heard like an umlaut. He's like, it's
yeah.
And I was going to go, what is that you're wearing? But then I realized there's no way to, you know, because then it just looks like I'm trying to pick up on him. And then it's just awkward for everyone. More awkward for everyone.
So I just.
Or even worse, it's like it's a single white female kind of thing that you're already dressing like him. Now you want to smell like him, too.
I should totally. The next time, if he's on, I should totally have black hair.
If you're wearing a leather jacket, your hair's black.
Beetle boots. Hello, Seth Aaron. How are you? Do you like my outfit? And then just stare at him real fixedly.
Yeah.
We're not stalking Seth Aaron, though.
No.
It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. As I think I said to you, just as we're getting ready to come back, did you ever really think in your life you would be in a room telling Seth Aaron that he smelled like an expensive hooker?
No.
Those are the moments you pray for, Don.
And again, I also, when I spent $5 on that chair at Goodwill, at the bins, I never thought that both Zach Wheaton and Seth Aaron would be sitting.
Seriously. This is like, I don't think we brought the Tina Yather celebrity stool with us when we left CBS, but that's like that stool that I stole from Quiznos. And then one day Tina Yather was sitting on it, and it was like my whole life was complete. But you could hear the like snick sound as the circle closed in my head. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964. Don't forget to join us tomorrow when our guest will include Mr. Bill Carter, author of Fools Rush In and Red Summer. And he's going to be speaking about Red Summer as well. And so we'll have the information on that. But he'll be in the studio with us tomorrow. It's 503-505-6964. Before we continue or do anything else, I should say that today's Rick Emerson Radio Program brought to you by Squires Electric. That's 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609, or you can find out more about them by going online to their website at squireselectric.com. That is squireselectric.com. Whether it's wires or wiring in your home or your business, whether it's a confluence of the two, maybe you have a home office, you're going to be expanding for just regular office, you're going to be doing a lot of work there, you've got one store, one location for your business, it's going to become two, going to become three, or maybe you are launching a business and you're going into a facility where they were doing something totally different with it before, and you make sure that it's going to be able to handle all of the needs of you and yours as you venture into the world of business. You just don't want to plug in, like, you know,
Like at home, like a wearing blender, or you know, at the office, you just you plug in one one Ricoh copy or one Mojo wire too many, and then suddenly the entire block goes dead. And that's no way to introduce yourself to your new neighbors. 503-252-1609. That's the number for Squires Electric, or you can contact them at squireselectric.com. Which, by the way, here's the thing: I'm not complaining. I'm just telling you, I'm like one step away from doing that because of my goddamn mother effing fridge, which is still not working. After a visit from the landlord, who, I love my landlord, he's a great guy, he really is. I mean, he's a good guy, and you know, I have no issues with him. He really treats us very, very well. It's like I have no quarrel with him. But I will say that my landlord yesterday, I wasn't there for this because I was here, but Laura was at home, and the landlord comes by to look at our fridge. Second fridge now. I mean, it's like we had another one, up until about a week ago. It goes away. He puts this new one in. Same symptomology. Freezer won't freeze. Fridge won't refrigerate. And he actually looks up at Larry and goes, I don't know. Maybe I should just actually spend some real money and not buy these pieces of crap. He actually said that. So, which indicating, by the way, that not only is the new one a piece of crap, apparently we've just been using a piece of crap fridge like since time immemorial, like since we moved into the place. So thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Well, too much tipping of the hand there, friend. In any event, you know, and it, never mind. Anyways, it's 503-252-1609. That is the number for Squires Electric or SquiresElectric.com. If you want to find out what is up with the wiring in your home or in your business, you want to get an estimate up front so you know about how much it's going to cost you, that's how you contact them. They are a proud sponsor of the Rick Emerson Show, helping to keep this program on the air, helping to keep the glorious fashion musings of Seth Aaron drizzling into your ear like so much spangled butter. Or a thing like that. At the news desk, here is Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk,
it's fanciful imagery.
Spangled
get off
butter.
My back.
I'm wondering how you spangle butter.
Tough skins I had to wear.
See, when I was in junior high school, I remember there being this hierarchy of pants, probably fifth grade.
Hierarchy of pants.
Fifth grade through eighth grade, there was this hierarchy of pants where if you wore jeans, you tried to wear Levi's jeans. Those were the only acceptable blue jeans, were Levi's, period. And everybody also wore cords. And you wanted to wear the Levi's corduroy pants, Levi's cords.
I didn't even know Levi's made corduroy pants.
They did. They made cords, and they made them in a number of colors. So you could tell, like, somebody whose family had money, they might have, like, it was like girls in the 50s with like multiple cashmere sweaters. It was like if a girl's family had money, then they would have like eight pairs, you know, that they could wear a different color every day. But yeah, so but you'd have what you wanted the Levi's cords. If your parents weren't really, you know, flush enough to keep you in the Levi's cords, then you'd have to get the Wrangler's cords, which made you feel kind of bad.
No,
Then there were the ones they sold at Sears.
Yeah.
And that was the hierarchy of pants. And you could tell just how unpopular and or poor a kid was by which pair of corduroys they were stuck wearing.
The only exception made for that, because we had the same hierarchy, the only exception made for that was that Kennewick is Kennewick is sort of it's not farmland itself, but it's ringed by farmland. I mean, it's basically just like it's sort of like here, where it's like you drive four blocks in any direction and suddenly you're like among cattle. And like we're at the school, we had, you know, the Future Farmers of America who were like, you know, it's a huge, huge deal, you know, at our high school or whatever. So there was a lot of farming kids at my school. And the farming kids wore Wranglers or Lees, and it was like that was okay. They were sort of grandfathered in because it was recognized that was like they didn't want to be effing up their Levi's because it's like you have to go home and your mom says, like, you know, go slaughter a pig or something.
Yeah, they're working pants.
Yeah, it's like you didn't want to screw those up. But otherwise, if you were wearing Wranglers, it's not like it is now where Wranglers have had sort of a resurgence, not with you or me necessarily, but with country fans, mm-hmm. like a post-Garth Brooks sort of a thing where Wranglers are so identified with like country music culture that they've become sort of popular again in that world. Lee jeans, by the way, are popular with nobody, except like your grandfather or some assless guy who works in the cubicle next to you at like the public works department. So there's that, and then there was like the Sears crap, which we had to wear and it's like at one point when I was in high school, it was like I was 13 or 14. I don't think I have my own money yet, and I was just starting to figure out like maybe I shouldn't dress like a knob all the time. And so my parents were going shopping, and then I ill-advisedly, you know, they said, "Well, do you need anything?" And I I didn't even know in retrospect what I was thinking. I guess how was I to know? But I said, well, I could really use some jeans, you know, just like something other than the crap I was wearing. And I think at that point I decided that, like Michael Penn, I was going to be a Romeo in black jeans. And so I said that black jeans were the way to go. Mm. It's not like you can't make black jeans work. I think that, what's his name? Seth Aaron actually had black jeans on. But of course, you know, I'm like, so just, you know, some black jeans. And I'm thinking black Levi's, which even if they don't work right away, it's like you wash them and they fade a little bit and they sort of – but it's like – I swear to God, it's like my dad was responsible for this. I can't even put this on my mom. My dad came back from Sears, of course, with the home of all things. It's like you can just outfit your entire family there for like $1.99.
Oh, I know. We were – and plus put it on the credit card.
That's right.
The Sears credit card. Everything that we owned, every item of clothing I wore in elementary school – came from Sears.
And it's like, so he comes back and he's like, oh, so son, I got you those black jeans you were wanting from the Sears. And it was like, not just that they were wrong. They were, in fact, I don't even know how to describe this. I don't know why this would exist. And, you know, Levi's have the very specific, there's the stitching and the riveting, and then there's the Levi's tag in the back. Everybody knows what Levi's look like. I think a lot of that stuff is actually trademarked. It's very, very distinct. So I swear to Christ, they were black polyester pants onto which it was almost like painted was like the stitching and the riveting and the tag in the back.
Oh, my God.
Seriously, it was like somebody – it's like they had injected dye to like draw on the characteristics that you would associate with Levi's jeans. And I was like – but then it's like on the one hand you go, well, this is the worst thing I've ever been handed in my life. This is the worst moment of my existence until this point on planet Earth. Yet you realize in the same moment it doesn't matter. You could spend 5 hours – he will never understand why it's so bad. You'll never be able to make him understand ever with a graph and an overhead chart and a spreadsheet. I could never make him understand. And so I think I just said, oh, thanks. Those are great. And I just put them in my closet and just never – I think they're probably still there when I moved out. I just never looked at them or touched them again. I buried them in the deepest recesses of my wardrobe. Good God almighty. All right. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Here's Don Taylor.
Sure. Snuff Watch.
Here's your Snuff Watch for Tuesday right here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Here is Don Taylor with your Snuff Watch.
The man who invented the first scuba system in 1941 has died at the age of 93. Christian Lambertson was a scientist, doctor, and a diver. In 1941, Lambertson was working with the Army's Office of Strategic Services to create special underwater forces. The underwater breathing equipment was used by the military in World War II, and the term scuba meant self-contained underwater breathing apparatus, and that was coined then. Lambertson was honored for his work in 2009. He said it was designed for rescue work for swimmers and went on from there to design further forms of breathing apparatus aimed at military operations and swimming. Lambertson also studied oxygen toxicity, diving-related diseases, and how humans could work in hostile environments, including the oceans and outer space. A memorial service is planned at the University of Pennsylvania in the spring.
People don't really appreciate, I think, some of these. This is another one of those inventions that you just take for granted now. And also people think that it's just that it's easy, that you just stick some air in a tank and a thing in a guy's mouth and that you, bam, you're done. You know, which, like, if that were the case, you could just, like, take an Aquafina bottle with you and just fill it with air before you left the surface. I mean, it really is an amazing, astounding thing, especially when you consider some of the terrible, terrible iterations of the technology. We had, like, guys with the big, like, metal bell on
their bells, yeah.
Which is just, like, the worst invention. You know that they – here's a fun fact. You know that the big diving – metal diving bell helmet that you always see those guys in, like, walking on the ocean floor or something? That wasn't even invented for – that was invented for firefighters, of all people, who said, maybe I don't want, like, a 70-pound hot piece of metal, like surrounding my face.
When I was a kid, there was a cartoon show on called Diver Dan. And it was – the host was a guy in one of those diving suits. And he was – I swear to God, they shot it – he was in a studio, and they shot it through a fish tank. So it to try to make it look like he was
really?
Like
– so he's just on the other side behind the fish tank going,
right.
Here I am underwater.
Yeah, and meanwhile there's like these goldfish and things swimming in front and the fake plastic plants and stuff.
Yeah.
And even at the age of like 5, I was like – He's not really.
He's in the worst special effects I've ever seen.
He's not in the ocean at all.
No, no. Really, the only thing that ever worked, because apparently that was a phenomenally ill-conceived, I mean, go figure, because again, it was made for firefighters. Apparently that was just like the worst, least effective method of breathing underwater, too. Here's a funny, well, not funny. Here's an awful, horrible story.
Oh, good.
I always get those confused. So they would send these guys down to the, down into the furthest reaches of, wherever, underwater, and they would have that metal diving helmet on with the huge tube in the top. And then upstate, then there's like Gilligan's on shore bicycling or something to give them oxygen. So occasionally there would be what they would call a catastrophic loss of pressure, where just suddenly it was like a bearing or something would blow out, or the hose would just get a hold or something. And they would, you've heard of the bends? Mm-hmm. This was not the bends. I swear to God, they would then fall victim to a fate that they called the squeeze. And the squeeze.
Oh, yeah.
The squeeze is where, like, you get these poor saps in their big metal helmet and their, like, underwater suit. And the guys would just get sucked up into the helmet. And then it's like they would go, well, Bob suddenly, he's not breathing much. And then they'd haul it up, and it's just like suit full of bones, helmet full of Bob. By the way, the book in which the squeeze is discussed ends the whole description of it by then just saying, by way of a single standalone sentence, "This has happened." There you go. All right. So that guy's dead. The inventor. Yeah. The man who made us fundamentally squeezeless.
Right.
He removed that danger. And doesn't self-contained underwater breathing apparatus have a whole like memody and rhythm to it that's sort
it
of
does.
Pleasing?
It's a nice sounding thing.
Rolls off the tongue in a rather satisfying fashion. There you go. That guy's dead. Here is Don Taylor.
A Naples, Florida woman was arrested.
I'm sorry, where?
Florida.
Ah, damn it. Sorry.
It was on Walton's Mountain, Florida.
Oh, yeah.
She was arrested Sunday after deputies say she attacked her roommate over a box of Thin Mint Girl Scout cookies. Hersha Howard, 31, was charged with aggravated battery with a deadly weapon. Howard's roommate, Jasmine Wanky, told deputies she was asleep when Howard burst into her bedroom.
Jasmine Wanky.
And accused her of eating the cookies. Wanky said she gave them to Howard.
Wanky.
Jasmine Wanky.
Oh, my God. Please, I have to interrupt for a second. How do you spell Jasmine in this story?
The way you normally spell it, only without an E at the end. J-A-S-M-I-N.
Jasmine. All right. And then Wanky? The normal way as well?
W-A-N-K-E.
That's so great. Okay.
Jasmine
There's Wanky. No good pronunciation there, too, because I thought, well, maybe it's not Wanky. Maybe it's Wank.
Yeah. Or Wink. Or 1K. Yeah, there's no way you could pronounce it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Wanky.
Okay.
Wanky said she gave them to Hersha Howard's kids because they were awake and hungry at 1 a.m. The women began to argue. Then Howard reportedly jumped on top of Wanky and struck her in the face. The two continued to fight until Wanky's husband separated them. When Wanky walked out of the room, Howard grabbed a pair of scissors and began chasing and threatening her. As the women ran down the stairs, Howard reportedly dropped the scissors, picked up a board, and struck Wanky with it. Wanky then ran into the kitchen, where Howard confronted and attacked her again. During the fight, Howard bit Wanky in the breast and continued to hit her until the two were separated again. The women ran out of the house, and then Howard reportedly picked up a sign and struck Wanky with it several times. Wanky's husband finally tackled Howard before deputies arrived and arrested her.
Everything in this story sounds like sort of insane, weird gibberish, like the biting Wanky in the breast. Just doesn't. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't even sound like it's a real sentence. It sounds like it's just a bunch of words that you're sort of throwing out because you know that I like them all separately.
Yes.
Okay.
And it all happened because the one woman ate the other woman's cookies.
Well, you can't. Well, do we know what kind of cookies they were?
Thin mint cookies.
Okay, they were thin mint, but
they
I mean
were
actual
Girl Scout
like
because
those
mint.
Just because they just came out.
Oh, I know.
Like this week, right?
Oh, I know. I was at Fred Meyer day before yesterday, and I saw my first sighting of the Girl Scouts. at the Fred Meyer selling the cookies. And I actually posted about it. One of the most popular posts I have had on Facebook in a long time, by the way, when I said, I am, when Girl Scout cookie season comes, I am conflicted as I love cookies but hate children.
Well, you speak for all of us there. By the way, if you want to see Hersha Howard's visual aid, and I know you do, you can see her mugshot, which is awesome, at rickemerson.com/pictures. You go to visual aids for February 22nd. The look on her face is this. Ain't that a bitch?
Yeah.
That is the look right there.
Don't mess with her cookies.
No, seriously. No. And anyway, Thin Mints. All right, let me ask you this. So your favorite Girl Scout cookie is the Thin Mint or is what? Tag along?
I would have to say my favorite cookie is the Thin Mint. I like the Tag Along, but I'm always ultimately disappointed in them because they're very, very fat, so you don't get very many of them.
That's true.
But I love coconut and I love chewy caramel, and they have a really nice texture to them. But ultimately, I think I find a box of Thin Mints much more satisfying.
And then here's a dumb question. Are the shortbread ones just called shortbreads? What is just a regular Girl Scout cookie with the little embossed logo or whatever you mean? You know,
crap. I don't remember what
that is. I think that might just be called. I mean, I guess I could ask and just go like, where are the shortbread ones? But I don't know if they have some sort of fanciful name.
Well, actually, I'm thinking of Samoas. Tagalongs are the peanut butter ones, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I'm thinking of Samoas.
But do they not have coconut?
No, Samoas are the ones with the caramel and the coconut. And
Tagalongs are peanut butter.
And I really love those. But I think that for your money, you get a better deal with the Thin Mints. And they are the best chocolate mint cookie I think I've ever had.
The thing about those Samoas is that I love them, but they are too sweet.
Yeah.
I get like two in, and it's like the box of those lasts me like 6 months because I get like one or two down, and I'm like, oh, I can't eat anymore. It's just so, like if your teeth start to itch. Yeah, it's just a bad.
And the shortbread cookies, yeah, they're okay, the plain shortbread, but it's like you kind of feel like, you know, I could have gotten a box of Lorna Doones for half the price and it would have been the same thing.
Yeah, it's like you could just go, you know, you get your Snack Wells on or whatever, Plaid Pantry or something.
But the Thin Mints, there is nothing on the market like the Thin Mints. You got to get them.
That's true. And also, here's another thing. Here's the thing, you cookie enthusiasts, because, again, Rick Emerson loves cookies. And really, cookies of any variety, with the exception of fruit cookies, like fruit flavored, like a lemon cookie, because that's just stupid. There shouldn't be a fruit flavored cookie.
I don't know. You ever had a good lemon bar?
Yeah, but no. See, but I don't. There is, to me, is no good lemon bar. Now, I can get with like a thumbprint cookie, where it's like a cookie with like a little fruit filling or something, or a piece of fruit on top. But I'm talking about where it's like, what's it? Well, it's an orange flavored cookie. Well, I don't. Why would you F that? Who wants that? Why just eat an orange or a cookie? Who, like, that's a thing where you just, that is solving a problem that nobody ever had. Like, nobody just sits around going, well, I don't know. I really want a bag of cookies, but I also want this orange. Maybe if I mash them together. Like, no one thinks that.
I feel that way about alternate flavors of Newtons. Like, I'm not...
Raspberry Newton?
Yeah, I'm not particular. I'm okay with the Fig Newton, but I don't eat them very often, and they're not anything I ever, like, go out of my way to get.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you got the Strawberry Newton and the Raspberry Newton, and it's like, you eat it and you kind of go... Yeah, this tastes a lot like a Pop-Tart, and this product did not need to exist.
Here's the thing about the Plaid Pantry is that typically when I go and I buy... See, now it's just a whole thing.
Now we're off on the snack thing again, too.
Damn it. Yes, yes, and my furious rage at Safeway, sons of bitches. Let me tell you why Safeway, they're on the enemies list for the next month or so at least. I mean, I may decide to take them back off, but there's going to be a reckoning and necks will crack. Here's why. Because Safeway has stopped stocking the box of Famous Amos cookies. And here's the thing. You're Famous Amos. That's a fine, as my mom would say, a button cookie. If you're not going to be making a cookie yourself at home, if you're going to buy a cookie, you're Famous Amos, especially in a vending machine where that's your best cookie value.
Back in the day, as a youth, before they started actually packaging them and selling them nationally.
You knew Amos?
No. He had a store.
Because there was an Amos.
He started with a store on either Hollywood Boulevard or the Sunset Strip.
Because he was a real guy.
Yeah, he was a real guy. And he had this little store. And it was like – it used to be like a burger joint. I remember it was a weird A-frame place that used to...
Like it was a Wiener Schnitzel that went out of business?
Yeah, it old Wiener Schnitzel. And it was his cookie store, and it was in Hollywood, and it was the only place you could get the Famous Amos cookies. And my friends and I, it would be like a thing. We'd go, okay, let's go to Hollywood, and we'll go to Tower Records, and we'll go to Famous Amos.
I have to
and
ask.
And we'd hit, like, but that was the thing. We'd road trip to go to Tower Records and to Famous Amos cookies.
Was he a kindly old black man?
He was. He was the nicest guy.
That's, see, because it's like, you see the picture picture of him in the front, and it's like you imagine.
He was exactly that guy. He was so friendly.
You totally are like, I know exactly what I want that guy to really be like. And then sometimes that's not the case, but it was.
And you would spend like a ridiculous amount of money because they were ridiculously overpriced even then. But you would buy like a half a pound or something in like a bag or a box or whatever, and they were just the best chocolate chip cookies you'd ever had in your life.
Even now in the bag out of the vending machine, Famous Amos cookies are really good. And I don't like a lot of packaged cookies because they taste like lard, so I can't eat Oreos anymore. But I will occasionally, such as like tonight when my wife is out of town, I would stop at Safeway and just buy like the box of Famous Amos. Because the thing about it is, then I don't have to hide it. Then I can leave the box out. And when I walk through the kitchen, I can just whoom, grab me a few. But Safeway, it's just gone. It's not like it was like it had been sold out. Like they removed the place on the shelf for the Famous Amos cookies. And now it's like, what am I?
Is this the Safeway like on 39th?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're famous Dicks. For doing that.
So it's like, then you got to go to the Plaid Pantry where you can get a little bag or something of them. But you know, here's the thing that they sell the Plaid Pantry now. There's this company called, it's so trashy, but they're good. There's this, do you ever buy something? It's like with the iPhone app that like magically, you know, turns Spanish to English and it's free or whatever, or it's like a dollar. And you're like, how is this possible? Do you ever buy food at a Plaid Pantry and you're like, how is it possible that they can make and sell this for a dollar? They sell at Plaid Pantry on the bottom shelf in the cookie section a company called Checkers. It is the Checkers Cookie Company. And they sell, I wish I should bring it in, no lie, it's like a bag about like this, like maybe one of your, is that like maybe one of your quart Ziploc bags. Now, it's not full to the brim with cookies because contents settle during shipping. But, I mean, it's like – it's a large, large bag. It's like half full of Famous Amos-sized cookies. They're not as good as Famous Amos. They're not that good. But they're certainly good. I mean, they're an edible cookie. They got you like your oatmeal, your chocolate chip. You know what that is? That's a dollar. It's a dollar. I don't even know how that's possible. I mean, it's got to be filled with like Guatemalan children or something. I mean, there's got to be something awful in
like
those.
Like sawdust and
not even that. Like the government's getting rid of nuclear waste that way. You know, like the government's taking something horrible that would be leaching into the ground, and they're like feeding it to me one small piece at a time. So anyway, I'm just saying it's a fine thing. How did we get onto the cookie thing?
I don't know. Famous Amos, by the way, had one of the best product placements I've seen in a movie in a very long time. I think we've talked about this before. I get really angry about product placements in movies and on TV, and I notice them all the time. They never seem to just go past unnoticed. They're like they just stick out to me. But in the movie Burlesque, Cam Gigante, who is this classically good-looking hunky fella, who I guess he's in the Twilight movies, and he was just in something else
recently. He's huge. He's that guy. He's massive.
Yeah, he's a good-sized guy. He's like 6-something, and he's quite cute. He's quite adorable. Yeah. But anyway, he has this very, very cute scene with Christina Aguilera where they're sharing a place and she's sleeping on his couch. And he shows up in these like horrible pajamas, which he says his mother bought him. And then he goes to bed and he closes the door. Then he comes out and he's wearing just the pajama bottoms. He says, oh, I need a glass of water. And he goes and he gets a glass of water. He goes back. Then he comes out and he walks past her completely naked into the kitchen. And she's like, what are you doing? He's like, I was hungry. And she's like giggling. And he's like, and he turns around and he has the box of Famous Amos cookies right in front of his junk.
That's awesome. The thing.
And he's like, I was hungry. And he turns around and looks at it and he goes, want a cookie?
Wow.
And it's adorable and funny and cute. But it's, and she's like, no, go away. He's like, okay. And then he goes back and he's like, if you want a cookie, you know where they are. And he's holding the cookies and now, strategically placed in front of him.
We'll have to talk about this tomorrow because you said that you had watched Burlesque, and I've deliberately not asked you anything about it. I don't know anything about it because I'm going to wait. So we'll do it tomorrow.
Okay.
We'll do that. We'll probably end up talking about Breaking Bad tomorrow as well because we did the clue for EH Vending here in just a moment. How, I don't know how we got into the Lemon Girl Scout. Oh, Girl Scout cookies.
The woman beating up the other woman because of the Girl Scout cookies.
Well,
and that led us to the Famous Amos cookies, and that led us to the Plaid Pantry snacks.
I mean, you don't screw with somebody's Girl Scout cookies because it's like those, again, once a year only can you get those. So, you know, I'm just saying, I think I speak for all of us in a scientific sense when I say that bitch crazy, because you don't want to. No, yeah. It takes my cookies. They're going to get the rat. They're going to get a bunch of fives is what they're going to get.
Now, friends of mine, really good friends of mine, three of them were sharing an apartment for years, and Girl Scout cookie season would come, and my friend Michelle would buy like extra boxes and put them in the freezer, and woe betide anyone who touches those freezer Girl Scout cookies.
You don't want to screw with that. All right, so there's that. Well, let's do one more here, and then we'll do the clue for today, and we'll probably bring things to a conclusion.
Let's do our Hick Watch, because I like this one.
A Hick Watch? Really?
Yeah, I do have a Hick Watch.
Okay, here's your Hick Watch for Tuesday right here on the Rick Emerson Radio program.
Copenhagen makes me feel so good. Copenhagen, the way I know it should. Well, I put a little chew in my mouth, go spitting, slobbering on around the house. That Copenhagen makes me feel so good.
Here's Don Taylor.
An Oklahoma City woman was arrested this week in a downtown parking lot after she refused to leave a portable toilet. Donna Jo Hoffman, 62, was arrested Wednesday night on a complaint of trespassing. According to Oklahoma City police, Hoffman is a transient who entered the portable toilet in a private parking lot about 10 p.m. on Wednesday. An employee for the construction company that owns the lot called police after she refused to leave. Police said officers asked her to unlock the toilet and leave, to which she replied, "No, I'm having a property dispute."
Okay, that's kind of great. Is the property dispute, well, maybe it's not. Is the property dispute to which she's referring the dispute about whether she can stay in the toilet? Or is it like about like some flop house somewhere? Because that's less funny.
It's hard to tell. She says she's a transient, so I think maybe she decided she owned it.
Well, possession is 9/10 of the law, you know.
I started to use the phrase squatter's rights, and I thought that would be inappropriate. But yeah, so ultimately, they forced open the door and arrested her.
But I mean, if we could just show up, in North America and be like, "We're here, it's ours.
Yeah.
We're here." You know, I mean, it's like you can just be in a toilet. It's mine.
I think she was just like, "Hey, free house."
Yeah, I mean, I love the idea that she referred to it as a property dispute, though. Like that sort of that to me, that's so much more amusing than the guy with the "Why lie? I need a beer" sign. I mean, that's a. I don't start a whole thing, but I mean, if we could just have a moratorium on people with funny asking me for money signs, that's a thing. Because, like, how often do you see one of those that you haven't already seen, like, 100 other places? Like, never. Like, the first time you see the guy, like, "Why lie? I need a beer." Like, that works once. Or the guy, a "Father killed by ninjas, need money for martial arts lessons," which I've seen, like, four or five different times from different people. Mm. How is that even possible? Like, how would four or five different guys in different parts of town all come up with a sign about ninjas?
And if you're not having any luck by saying that you're like a Vietnam vet and writing "God bless" and having a dog and maybe a cast on your arm, do you think you're really going to get people giving you money because you're being funny about it?
I don't know. It's like it's just but it's like not even that. It's like using funny using someone else's wit.
Yeah.
Like, it's not enough that you're like a crackhead. And that I then go for the rest of the day feeling guilty for not giving a stranger free money, which makes no sense, but which happens anyway. But also that you're just filching somebody else's comedy and using it with the K and using it as your own. Rick Emerson does not approve of these things. All right, there you go. Wait, we closed out the Hick Watch, right?
No.
Okay, was that the end of the Hick Watch right there?
Yes.
So this was actually part of the. Okay, so there you go. Was the Florida woman a Hick Watch too? The cookie?
No.
Thief? Okay, the Hick Watch is just this woman who has a property dispute and she's in a toilet.
Right.
All right. All blends together. In what state did this take place?
Oklahoma.
That seems like an awful, awful state filled with nothing good.
Yeah.
Name something
I've never been to
good
Oklahoma.
That came from Oklahoma.
The musical Oklahoma.
Okay. I guess you're allowed that one.
And I'm actually being slightly sarcastic because I don't really like Rodgers and Hammerstein, and I don't really like the musical Oklahoma that much.
I'd grant them Garth Brooks, but I mean, really, after that, I Hanson. I give them Garth Brooks and Hanson.
Are they from Oklahoma?
Hanson. Yes, the musical group Hanson. They're from Oklahoma. So I get that. That's it. Mm-hmm. You got those two. Nothing else. I mean, really, it seems to be just basically weeds that comes from there. So
yeah.
Okay. Any good jokes lately?
Only the ones I read on homeless guys' signs.
When's the last time you bought? Hey, let me ask you this. Did you ever buy Laffy Taffy? Recently, as an adult?
Not as an adult, I don't think, no.
Okay.
No.
Yeah, me either.
How's your dog?
Which one?
Philo. I figure Max can take care of himself. Philo I worry about.
Philo just, his new toy is... Got him a large, oversized ant. looks like the ant from A Bug's Life, sort of rounded with the rounded features, and he squeaks. Huh. And so now Philo's thing is to, whenever he is afraid of anything, which is like constantly, if ever there's a noise, he runs and he grabs his aunt. Because we have a bowl that we keep all his toys in by the door. It looks like a wok, sort of. But we just have all of these bowls. And whenever there's any sort of thing that frightens him, somebody like banging trash cans or like somebody coming home or like a gunshot, he runs to the bowl, leans in, and goes, and picks up the ant and then runs away to the furthest corner of the house, like into my office, and then sits on my chair, like shaking and holding his ant in his mouth and squeaking it.
Is it because the ant is the largest of his toys?
I don't know. I believe he thinks the toys have some sort of supernatural or shield-like power.
Hmm.
And also, he's an idiot. So, you know, there's that as well. We should we'll just do this. Trying to put a better face on it, but I mean, no. Can't be done. It's time for clue number two for this week's Name That Snack contest, brought to you by EH Vending. Find out more by going to ehvending.com. That is ehvending.com. And I should tell you this. Sometimes, you know, you talk to a company and it's like, you know, they... Well, like with Famous Amos, you know, there was an Amos, but sometimes there isn't, like a Betty Crocker or an Uncle Ben. I'm sorry, Ben, as he's now known, who's the president of the company and has a brass nameplate to that effect. And who wears a double-breasted pinstripe suit, which is awesome. But sometimes it's like, you know, there just is, you know, the company, you know, they market it as like, well, I'm Joe and this is my place. And there is no, like, there's no Joe, there's no place. It's just like it's owned by DuPont Chemical, like everything is. That is not the case with Squires Electric, which is why I said Joe, and it's not the case with EH Vending. You know, the people who advertise here and the companies who advertise here, they are real people and longtime listeners almost to a man, without exception. Longtime listeners of the show who want to do something to give back for all that Rick Emerson has given them. And so they help to keep the show happening and jumping. They not just this show, but also Legion of News, which airs every day. It's made possible by business partners like Squires Electric. James is the sales manager and Josh is the owner. And Josh especially has been, no lie, that guy's been emailing me. Like, if you were to go back and carbon date things, like, he's been emailing me since, like, 1998. So he really is a longtime listener. They're extended members of the Rick Emerson family in that sense. And you can contact them at 503. This is important, 503-897-8204. Or if you're in the Couve, that is 360-816-1853. 360-816-1853 or ehvending.com. So if you are... a worker, you're an employee, and you're somebody who's just stuck in the office or the shop. You find yourself stuck for a long time between meals. You just want to be able to snack without having to leave the place and go find a plaid pantry or something. Or if you're a new office, a new business, you're starting up, and maybe that's just one of those things you didn't think about. You're like, hey, we're ready to open. Oh, my God, no vending machine. You contact EH Vending, and they will get you all set up. You start off right the first time, and they specialize in striking deals with people who have, maybe just one outlet, or it's not a whole chain of stores. Maybe it's just one location. They're going to find something works for you. Please tell me you heard it here. That is ehvending.com. ehvending.com. Here's clue number two. Don't forget, once Friday comes and the fifth clue, if you are the first person to correctly identify it on Friday via snack at rickemerson.com, you win yourself a bag of consumable goodness from EH Vending. Clue number two is salty. There you go. Clue number two. Salty. You know what I'm talking about.
Putting that together with the other clue, and
yeah, really?
Well, those two words together, and it's kind of disturbing.
Are you coming up with Leif Erikson? What?
Or Leif Garrett?
Well, I did. Oh, never mind. I was going to open my mouth. I was going to say something that would get us all in trouble. Anyway, the Rick Emerson show is ending now. I was going to make an observation about David Cassidy. Did you see he got popped for DUI?
I did see that, yes.
I wonder if he needs consoling.
I'll make a call.
Thank you. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. Don't forget to join us tomorrow when our guests will include Mr. Bill Carter, author of Fools Rush In and Red Summer. We want to thank today's guests, including Mr. Seth Aaron. Find out more about him and all he does. It's SethAaronDesigns.com. That is SethAaronDesigns.com.
Legion of News.com. We will be back again tomorrow at noon for Legion of News. Immediately afterward, we'll be joining you for this very fine radio program. After a brief musical interlude, we'll have an encore of today's Legion of News and an encore of this, The Rick Emerson Show. We are brought to you by made possible by a generous grant from y'all, and it is Tuesday, February 22nd, 2011, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, as always, thank you for listening. Be safe. See y'all tomorrow. Bye now.